Sometimes you'll get in a bind, but the day will come that'll bring you luck. Don't live too fast, just set your pace, and when it's over, you'll win that race. So hang on, boys, keep on trucking, keep on trucking till you reach the top.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank number 28. Thank you very much for tuning in. By the way, if you guys are on iTunes, please hit subscribe so you can check on these every week. I put them out every Monday. So you can listen at work, which is what everyone does at podcasts. They listen at work and don't do anything useful, and that's why we're in a recession. So today on the podcast, I'm welcoming my good friend, Mr. Steve Simone, who I've known for like 10 years. He's one of my oldest friends in Los Angeles. We sort of started at the Comedy Store right around the same time, and we've been there ever since, just fighting it out. So that's what today's episode's about. It's all about sticking to it, just continuing to chase your dream. Speaking of that, I have a couple things to announce. On October 26th through the 30th in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada, I'm taping my first comedy CD, just in time for the medium to be completely dead. I'm doing it at the Comic Strip. It's the website, if you want tickets, is thecomicstrip.ca. It should be fun. I'm doing it at the Rooftop Records. I'm really excited about it. It should be cool. Plus, I can get rid of all this material. Never have to do it again. So, come out and see a lot of these jokes for the last time anyone's ever going to see them. And also, I'm headlining the Los Angeles Improv, the Hollywood Improv, November 11th. Go to improv.com for tickets to that. They finally let me headline, which is nice, instead of banning me for taking my dick out on stage. It's a nice switch. But that's it, everybody. I'm really glad you guys have been tuning in. We got ranked in the top 10 of iTunes comedy last week, which is crazy. So thank you very much for your support. That's really cool. Glad you guys are enjoying these. And with that in mind, please sit back, relax, and enjoy Ari Shaffir's Skeptic Tank number 28. Persistence with Mr. Steve Simone.
Keep on trucking. Keep on trucking till you reach the top. Yeah, keep them wheels rolling. Don't ever let them stop. Tell old bad luck that you ain't buying. You can't fail if you keep trying. Hang on, friend. Keep on trucking. Keep on trucking till you reach the top. Yeah.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Skeptic Tank. My guest today is Steve Simone.
What's up, Ari?
How are you, Steve?
I'm good.
So we're going to talk about, I don't even know how to term this, not failure. It's a
struggle. That's perfect.
It's the struggle to succeed, I think. That's the...
persistence, maybe?
Yeah. Persistence. That's it. That's what I'm looking for. Persistence. Yeah, yeah, that's it. Okay. That's absolutely it. Did we start together? What did we do?
Pretty much.
When did I come in contact
with you? I remember this. I remember when I first moved out here.
Yeah.
I had two roommates I didn't know. So I was probably out here for a couple. Yeah. As soon as I started to do comedy, my roommate came to a show once, open mic at the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
And I remember him specifically saying, "You were really good. Was you and that guy Ari were the two funniest."
at the open mic?
Yeah, but potluck? You weren't... Yeah, at Potluck, probably like September, October of 2000.
Yeah, was I...
talking to me yet? No.
Was I an employee there yet, or was
yes.
I still doing... Okay.
You were an employee.
Yeah, was I talking to you yet?
Dude, this is my favorite Ari story. I think... So that was like September. I got my job there in January. That was like October. Probably October or November, because I didn't even... have it figured out how to get to the store yet.
Okay.
Until like a month here. And then like January, I got my job answering phones. And it was a Sunday night, you had done a set. And you had mentioned being from Maryland. And I'm like, oh my God, I went to college in Maryland. This guy's funny. He's cool.
Where'd you go, Towson?
No, I went to Loyola. Oh,
okay.
And I'm like, yeah, I'll just start a conversation with this guy. He's from the East Coast. I'm from the East Coast.
I'm dreading this story. I'm antisocial. It's not that I'm rude.
You were sitting on the steps in the main room.
Mm-hmm.
It was like when I had one of those stupid Sunday night shows. You were probably
steps in the main room
where you go through the double glass doors off the Sunset and you step up to the front steps in the main room.
Was it closed there or was it?
No, you were talking to the other cool kids, and I was like the nerd kid, like just watching people with friends. Like, oh, I remember when I had friends.
What was the main room doing open? Was that like rock comedy night, or was I working?
You were working.
Okay.
But it was over. Sense. You know when it's like over? Yeah, you're probably working the door, and you're just sitting there talking to like probably...
Well, if you're the cover booth, once the
probably
rush...
like Jordy and Favorman at the time.
Once the rush comes in, you're done.
You're done.
You just check someone's idea if they come in, but no one's coming in.
So, you were definitely done. Maybe you weren't working, because this is what happened. So then like everybody sort of dissipated, and you're just sitting there, and I'm like, hey. And you look at me, you're like, hey. And I went, so you're one from Maryland. You're from Maryland. I went to college here. And you went, yep. And you just got up and walked away.
Oh, no.
And I was like, it's going to be tough making friends in a new city.
Whenever people tell me like, oh, my first time in LA, you were there at my first show in Los Angeles. And I was like, oh
no. Yeah. My heart stops. I'm always like, did I do a dick thing? Please, God, I don't.
Caparulo said that to me. And I was like, he goes, no, you were super helpful. You told me the whole deal with the open mic and how to do it.
That's
the curve was like, oh, you got like a 1 in 5 chance. That was being pleasant and informational. So you moved to like Santa Monica or something, right?
I moved here. I didn't know. And like, I look back at what I did, and it was definitely crazy.
Yeah.
Like, I remember last year I was back in Philly, and I got to open up for Dom.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to this awesome.
That's cool.
It was so cool. That was like.
Being back in Philadelphia.
It was
from
my
there
first
too?
Time. Yeah.
Oh, wow. And Eleanor.
It was me, Dom, and Eleanor.
Wow.
And it was like, you know, after 10 years of doing comedy, I finally got to come home, do a show with a legend.
A legitimate show.
A legitimate show in the best comedy club in the city, the night before Thanksgiving, and it was Helium. Like, maybe it was worth it. You know,
night
like
before Thanksgiving?
Night before Thanksgiving. I had a lot of friends there. I had family there. People I hadn't seen in a while. I used to work for the Eagles, so
was
a lot
this
of
past year or 2 years ago.
It was a year ago.
Okay.
And
you used to work for the Eagles, so you had friends.
That I didn't even let them know I was coming home. They just
found out.
They just found out, which made me feel even better.
Oh wow!
Because I feel weird about inviting people to
me
stuff.
Too.
I can't do it.
You know what I compare it to? Edgar Allan Poe never goes, "Hey guys, want to read my new poem?"
Right.
It's
no.
Just like he would never
exactly.
do that, right?
Exactly.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe he did, but I doubt it.
Yeah, that's the one thing that sucks about comedy. It's like you get rewarded for being a good salesman and a good marketer and not necessarily a good comic. I can't do it.
That's why a manager is so important, because he'll be the salesman for you.
Correct. That's why you need somebody to get it done.
Yeah.
So there was this guy I loved that used to work for the Eagles.
Yeah.
His name was Butchie. Butch, no lie. And he was in charge of the Philadelphia Eagles security. He was just cool. Some people were just cool. He's like a
Butchie was his nickname?
Yeah, his last name was
Butchenstein or something?
Buchanico. The coolest. Like,
there's a different kinds of East Coast ethic.
Absolutely.
It's like 10 different shades of white.
He was the best.
Buchanico.
Yeah. Butchie was the best. Like, and I used to like I worked in the marketing department. I always had like the merchandise, and like whenever he would need merchandise, I'd carry it out to his car, because you know you're raised to be an actual courteous, respectful human being.
Yeah.
And he was always really nice to
me. Good family.
Yeah.
It's amazing. People are like, what's your angle? I'm like, no, it looks like you're struggling with those groceries. I have an extra hand.
Right.
I'm going. I'll just stop for a second.
Can I help you in any way, because you're a fellow human?
I had some girl think I was going to rape her out here. I was coming down the hill. And I was like, do you need help with those? She goes, I'm okay.
What does the city do? Like, dude, even if you smile at people, especially girls like in the supermarket, I smile at everybody. I smile at dogs.
Yeah. People smile back at you, though.
Not always. Sometimes they look at you like,
what are you doing?
Why? What's your agenda? I have my cell phone and mace. Like,
it's like that Simpsons episode. Dial 9-1, and then I'll open up the door and see who it is. And you get ready to dial 1 again.
So perfect. So randomly, night before Thanksgiving, we're at this place called Chicky and Pete's, which is the best. They do crab fries, cheesesteaks.
Crab fries, wow.
Yeah, oh, awesome. It's like fries with Old Bay and cheesy crab sauce.
Did you get a lot of Baltimore, Chesapeake, like, carryover?
There's an influence, yeah. Okay. There's definitely an influence. So imagine that with like awesome cheesesteaks, hot chicks dressed up, and a sports bar.
Yeah.
It's the coolest. It's the best.
Okay.
So we're in there, and I'm with Dom and Eleanor, and my big brother is like proud of me. That means a lot.
That
you know, because he's like a real grown up. And
I just went home to play DC. I opened for Rogan.
Awesome.
It was awesome, because it was like a 1,600 seater. And I did it the month before at some like performing arts center by myself. And it was
remember that.
Yeah, it was like 100 people per show, 200 people per show.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was nice, but this was like a way bigger. But then I could hear my friends' laughter like somewhere up in the balcony.
1,600?
You could just hear it. You could just hear it. And you're like, that's nice.
Yeah, I did Boston with Paulie once, and we did, what's that, Wiltern?
The Wilbur.
Wilbur, yeah. Awesome theater.
Yeah.
And I had buddies from college that were living in Connecticut. And
so they will come out.
Yeah, and they were up in the balcony, and I heard my one buddy's maniacal laugh. And I started laughing on stage that out of 1,000 people, I could hear Constantino's
that.
Laugh.
That's so weird how you can make out one laugh. Yeah. Your laugh you can always hear at the comedy store.
That makes me self-conscious.
Moron.
Yeah, the Henry Hill.
You get so into it.
I love it. So Butchie, I run into this guy randomly. He wasn't even at the show.
Okay.
I didn't think he would remember me because it's been like 12 years,
okay,
10, 11 years. And I see him over there and I just want to, you know, be a gentleman. Like, nice guy. I don't know if you remember me, but then he goes, Stevie Simone.
Wow.
He made me feel so good. And he goes like this. He goes, you know, I think about you a lot. And he goes, what you did. He goes, going out there, not knowing anybody, not having any money. He goes, I don't know if that took a lot of balls or little brains. And I look back at it and I go, I think it took a little brains. He goes, nah, you have to have some balls to go out there, kid. But he goes, in your case, it probably was more little brains than a lot of balls.
I always told people that, like, it takes so much courage to go out there and chase your dreams. And I was like, for a while, I just took that compliment. I was like, oh, thanks. Mm. But then I realized, like, no, it was just fear
of
having a job under those halogen lights.
Yeah, I couldn't do it.
Working the 8.5 hours. It's not even 8 hours a day. It's eight and a half or nine. Because they take off for lunch. What happened to 9 to 5? It's 9 to 5:30 now.
Oh, easily. Plus your commute. And then it's like if you want a promotion, if you want to keep that job, you have to get there early.
Yeah.
Then you have to get there late.
I couldn't do it. I was just cowardly. I ran away.
And then all the people that you know wind up being the people that you work with. And then the only thing you talk about is work. So that it literally becomes your life. And I'm like, I don't want this life.
Yeah. So you moved with no money? You had some savings.
Well, this is – no. Okay. I was supposed to move out here like 9 months earlier. I came out on a vacation, and one of my buddies that I was on vacation with was like, I'm moving out here. He goes, this is the best place ever. So he was such a meathead. He had like hurt his tricep, and he took
– By the way, I don't even know what tricep is, but go ahead.
The muscle in the back of your arm.
Oh, those things. Are those the ones you do the pull downs to move?
Yeah, sometimes. Okay. Well, he was doing like – yeah, I mean, he was a ster- – long story short, he took a shots of like what football players take to play in games just so he could bench press at Gold's Gym in Venice.
Oh, my God. Like get healthy now. It's game time.
Yeah, like a painkiller.
Oh, my God.
So because he wanted to bench heavy at Gold's Gym in Venice – Yeah. And then he tore his tricep.
Oh, because that's the Super Bowl for them.
Yeah, for him. Gold that Gym. Was like the meathead.
What did you
winner's
used to call
circle.
It? Mecca? The people the used Mecca. To call it Mecca?
They still do.
that's the Arabs' holiest area. Right. The most important part.
That you have to go to once in your
they
life.
They call that Mecca. Yeah,
yeah, they call that Gold's
My
Gym
gay friend called West Hollywood, that strip in West Hollywood on Santa Monica Boulevard, the gay area.
Is that the
he
gay
called
Mecca?
That Mecca, yeah.
It's fantastic.
They have like Rage and Mickey's and all these like the gayest clubs.
Well, people just need a place where they can go and they're like, finally, I fit in.
Yeah.
And for a meathead, Gold's Gym is that.
Okay.
Well, he goes home, realizes he can't move his arm because he ripped his tricep off. So instead of moving out here, he was like, I got to keep my job to keep my health insurance. And I'm like, what did you do? I already quit my job. I quit my job.
Because you were supposed to go with him.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he had said that he was going to – He had money saved.
Yeah.
I didn't have money saved. And he was like, don't worry about it. I'll pay for the rent until you get on your feet. So I'm like, okay, this is a great
There's
plan.
There's so many stories of that, by the way, of someone counting on someone just making false promises.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, yeah, totally. No big deal.
Right. So then I'm
such an Italian thing to do too.
Ugh.
I'll totally help you out. I'll totally hook it up.
No, you won't.
No, you won't. You just you like won't. The idea of being able to.
Yeah.
You're not going to return my phone calls, or I'm going to call you. I'm like, hey, so can you pay the rent? Like, what are you on a freebie?
Yeah.
I'm like, no,
and it's
I don't.
Like, not that they're being jerks. It's just that everybody wants to help. Everybody. Yeah. This was the one thing I realized about like everybody wants to be a hero.
Uh huh.
Everybody really wants to be a great person.
Yeah.
So sometimes you verbalize that.
Call me. I'll get you in next time.
Yeah, but you really can't.
Oh, that's going to take more than 3 minutes of work? Forget it.
Or
I'm not going
to
help him.
Maybe I was misinterpreting my ability to get things done.
Yeah.
Like one of the reasons why I hated getting drunk was I would just always make fake promises to people. I'd be like, you could definitely stay at my house.
Really?
Yeah, because I just wanted people to like me.
You made up fake characters when you got drunk and just became a different person. Like literally, you're like, I'm going to be...
A karate
John
expert.
John Junkins now. Yeah, a karate expert. You're a crazy person.
So, all right. So I quit my job, and I did have some savings, but I used that to live off of before I moved out here. So by the time I moved out here, I had a car that barely ran.
Yeah.
And I think I had like...
That bluish one?
It was a Ford Probe.
Oh, yeah. I remember
black.
That one. Yeah. Yeah.
And that made it across country. And I left Philly with like, say, $2,500.
Yeah.
But then by the time I got in the town, got my car fixed, I had to fix my car. So that was a couple $100 to make sure it can make the trip. By the time I landed in L.A., I had like $1,800 because I had spent money to fix my car, gas, and hotels and food for the 4 days it took to get here. So I get to L.A. not really knowing anybody, no job, and I had like $1,800.
Okay.
And then
no place to live?
No place to live.
Oh, you need almost $1,000 just for a deposit.
Right.
Oh.
So crazy.
Yeah.
I didn't know what I was up against. I just reached a point when I was at home. I was like, I can't do this anymore. I was...
Do what?
I quit my job.
Eagles.
Well, no. that was the first level of decisions.
Okay.
Where I was like, because prior to that, I had a real cubicle job, like at a credit card company, which was awful.
Okay.
So I just quit that.
What did you do? Cold calling? MBNA?
I sold, my last job there was I sold auto insurance over the phone.
Ugh.
It was awful.
For a credit card company?
Yeah.
Ugh, just spamming.
Ugh, it was terrible. No, I don't even know if I'm allowed to talk about, like, what they did is they made people think they won a prize.
Yeah.
Like, call this number and you might have won a new BMW.
And you're worried about not being able to talk about it. That sounds so illegal.
Right. So they gave people scratch-off tickets. Oh. And they were like, call this number to see if you got a new car.
Yeah.
And then we'd be like, I'll check that number for you. But the reason why we're having this promotion is to generate interest about our new auto insurance product.
Oh, no.
Would you like a quote over the phone? It was awful.
Oh, no.
So I didn't last long.
And that's horrible.
Yeah.
That's really horrible. You're just taking advantage of probably old people, right?
I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I was like, I can't do this. And then I was going to go to law school.
Yeah, I was going to do that.
I took my LSATs, and then I'm like,
What'd you get?
I don't remember. It wasn't what I wanted. Because you know how those, like, Kaplan courses say we'll guarantee you 10 points?
Uh-huh, 10 points higher.
My first pretest, I got, like, a 169 or a 170. I'm like, oh, my God, I'm going to go to Harvard.
Yeah.
Like, I really thought.
Yeah. That's, by the way... More than SATs or anything else. That is what I remember here.
That was it.
That was way bigger than your grades.
Way
your extracurriculars.
Bigger. If you killed the LSAT.
If you got a 179. It was out of 180. If you got like a 179
you could go anywhere.
You're done.
You're done.
You can get straight Ds.
And I had like, I did really good in college.
Oh, okay.
I did. So I wound up getting like a 160
something. 169 or something. Yeah.
No, it wasn't that high. It was like a 163, 164. Yeah. But it was good enough to go to schools, but it wasn't good enough to like get a ride.
I'm to
like,
say, I'll go wherever I want and you'll pay for it.
Right. And I was like, I didn't want to be a lawyer that bad. I wanted to say I was a lawyer to make my parents happy.
Yeah.
But I didn't really want to do it.
There's a time when you're little where you don't even think about like, do I even want this? I don't know. I just say I do because you should be a lawyer. But like, is that something that
I
would find enjoyment doing?
And I had randomly met people
that
were attorneys during that.
That hated it?
That hated it.
Yeah. I worked at a law firm for years. And I remember one new I was not even a paralegal. I was just working the file room.
Yep.
And I remember one new lawyer was like, this isn't fun.
This sucks.
Yeah.
I remember two distinct conversations with strangers. One was in a diner in South Philly, this place called the Melrose, which is tremendous, where people listen to your conversations and just jump in. Like, tremendous. And
couldn't
this
help
guy.
But noticing you were talking about. Really?
Yeah. I was like 22 at the time. And he goes, look, kid, don't be a lawyer. He goes, it sucks.
Yeah.
And he started to talk to me. He goes, if you still want to be a lawyer when you're 30, go back to law school then. He goes, get a job, make money, go to Temple at night, and be a lawyer. He goes, but give yourself some years.
Temple University.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Temple for me was a different thing. Temple for me was like, oh, the non-religious people call it temple instead of shul. So weird.
And then another attorney once in a bar.
He also told you?
He had a real talk with me. He goes, you know where my wife and kids are right now? They're at home sleeping in the house I'm paying for you. Do you know why I'm here? Because I hate my life.
Wow.
And he goes, I see it in your eyes. He goes, you're a good person. He's like, don't be a lawyer. It sucks.
Wow. Yeah, you're like, the money's better. That's a good job. That's a job you're supposed to want
to
have.
It's prestigious.
But then you're like, do I want to do the work?
Yeah, the day in, day out. Not the work to get there.
80 hours a week to be to your first year.
A boring, awful. And then depending on what you practice, it's either just going to be reading 1,000-page documents looking for a mistake.
God.
Or like it's like being a police officer sometimes, in the sense that you're dealing with the worst behavior society has to offer.
And most lawyers aren't LA law type lawyers.
No.
They're like copyright laws.
It's so boring.
You know? And you have to like, oh.
So boring.
We took a class trip once to somebody's father was a judge. We were allowed to sit in and watch. Uh-huh. And it was something like that, a copyright or like one of those things. Either copyright or patent, something.
Intellectual property of some sort.
Boring.
Boring.
And we sat there and fell asleep for 4 hours listening to these cases. Yeah. Traffic law is better than that.
Yeah, I'd rather be like one of those guys that has an ad. Do you have a DUI? Have you been injured? To me, that would be more fun.
Called dos, dos, dos.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, I honestly, like in the back of my brain, I was like, worst case scenario, I'll be that guy and just have fun and meet people. Yeah. And try to get people
like
that need money.
From Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Just like that. Exactly. But after not getting the score I wanted, and getting some good advice, and then a well-timed song on the radio.
What song? What song?
I don't even.
It's amazing how art can do that to you.
Where I was like, God, I don't know what to do. Give me a sign or whatever. And then I go, if one of my favorite songs comes on the radio, I'm not going to be a lawyer. Blah, blah, blah.
Really?
And it was Harry Chapin, Cats in the Cradle. It's like the gayest. Still cry at that. Always. A child. And I was like, I don't want that life.
And then that dad who ignores his son until it's too late.
Exactly. And then I was like, I don't want that life.
Yeah.
And that was it.
I don't want your life.
Plus, I had already had student loans from undergrad. And I'm like, I had talked to people that had law degrees that were waiting tables because they couldn't get a job. And I'm like, holy fuck.
Really? Whoa. Yeah, what if you finish in the bottom third of your class?
Right.
Oh, no one talks about them.
Right. If I killed the LSAT and got into an awesome college, you're guaranteed a good job.
Yeah.
You get into a top tier.
Yeah. You go to Harvard Law, you're fine.
Yeah. And not that I ever, but even if I got like just a school somebody heard of, but if I had to go to like Larry School of Law.
Yeah.
And then you have to hustle and grind. And I'm like, why do I want to hustle and grind in that world when I don't love it? So I was like, you know, comedy, if I have to hustle and grind, at least I'll love the process.
Yeah.
And I remember talking to my mom before I moved out in the night, and it was really – came true. I said, at least I'll be able to form friendships with people that think the same way I do.
Wow.
And I remember that. I remember going – and that's what drew me to the store. It was –
What did you always call it?
The Island of Misfit Toys.
That's it. Yeah.
The people that just didn't fit in anywhere
else.
And they
just kind of moved around until they found this island. That's just
that's right our Mecca. Yeah. It's like the Mecca for smartasses. It's the Mecca for people that...
When people come into town now, and they, for the longest time, like, oh, come out, we'll go... I have to show them the Hollywood sign. And it's like, well, what's to do at night? Come to this club. I heard this club is nice. And it's like, ugh. But now, I realize, like, you know what I enjoy doing? I'm like, why don't you come hang out at the Comedy Store with me? You can drink if you want.
Right.
Watch some comedy, and we just talk. That's what I like doing.
Let's just hang out.
That's what I like doing.
It's my favorite thing.
Yeah.
Just hanging out.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyway, you found – what were you saying?
So I don't know how we got in. So I'm in L.A.
Oh, yeah. Okay. With no money.
No money. I spend like – I stop at that Sahara Hotel across from Rock and Roll Ralph's.
You stayed there?
No, this is the story. I get the room.
That's a hooker hotel.
Dude, it smelled like – Dude, I went in there and the room smelled like Broken Dreams. It's the only way to describe it. Like it smelled so awful that I've never been assertive in my life. I went into the room, I said, fuck this. I went down, I go, I want a refund. And the guy's like, I'll give you a different room. I went, no.
Normally you'd be like, oh, I guess I'll just have to stay here for one
night.
And
it was so bad.
Yeah.
This is before I ever learned how
when
to be
you knew,
assertive
you can
stick
get
up
a
for
refund.
Myself.
Like, no, I didn't.
I didn't care. I'm like, yeah. I knew I needed the money, and I knew there was no way I was staying in that place.
Oh, that helps, yeah.
I needed the money. No way I'm staying in that place. Give me my money back. So now I'm driving around L.A., and I'm like, I don't know anybody. Where am I going to go?
Yeah.
And I'm like, this was definitely a mistake.
Yeah.
Like, I was first night in L.A., and then when I was out here 6, 7, 8 months earlier on vacation.
Yeah.
I stayed at the Best Western across the street from the store.
Is that still open?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah. And, like, I guess we had gotten an internet rate where it was, like, 60 or 70 bucks a night then.
Yeah.
In January. Wow. In August, when I came back out.
How much?
It was, like, 250 bucks. And I'm like, are you kidding me?
January is the best, by the way. I went to Disneyland this year in January, like, January 8th or something.
Right.
Lines are like 15 minutes.
It's the best.
Great. Just catch a warm day. You've got to catch a warm weekday.
And there's plenty of them in January.
Yeah.
That's when tourists should definitely come out.
But they don't know if it's going to be warm, like when they have to make their flight 3 weeks ahead of time or a month or two months.
It's 70% chance that it's going to be warm.
Yeah, that's right. It won't be that cold.
It's never that cold. So I was like, that was a big chunk of money. So then the next morning I woke up and I'm like, okay, you spent more money last night. You're in LA. What are you going to do?
Yeah. So you got to decide now.
Now. So I went down to Mel's.
Because, okay, go ahead.
And I had a buddy.
Mel's restaurant?
Yeah, Mel's Diner. I had a buddy that moved out here in May. But he wasn't getting back to the small high school. He graduated a year after me. And we had a lot of mutual friends, but it wasn't like we were boys. It wasn't like me and you.
Right.
It was like, I know this guy well enough to call.
Okay.
That was about it. We had partied together. We had a lot of mutual friends, and he was a good guy.
Okay.
And he turned out to be a great guy, because I call him, and he goes, well, I was expecting the phone call. Uh-huh.
Really?
Yeah.
And he really? Goes,
yeah. Because he knew I was coming out.
Oh.
He knew at some point I was going to come out. Because, you know, friends, it's really weird, because it's a world before Facebook. It's a world before, like, email was kind of new. Not everybody had email at the time.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Not everybody had cell phones at the time. Like, you still had to leave messages.
I didn't have a cell phone for 5 years later.
Right.
10 years. No, not 10 years.
So I'd left him some messages, and, like, we were playing phone tag. Because in the back of my brain, I was like, well, maybe he'll let me stay there till I find a place or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Now that was my only option. And he was cool enough. He was like, look, dude, I get off work, drive down to Santa Monica, and we'll hang out, and we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
So I go down to his place. I crashed on his couch that night. He was staying with him and two girls. Another one was another, like, kind of friend.
Yeah.
Who, same thing. Graduated with them. They let me crash on their couch for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
My younger brother had a fraternity brother that lived down in the South Bay. I called him. And he was like, you know, I'm like, I don't know anybody. What am I going to do? And he goes, well, there's this really cool pizza place that has great wings.
Yeah.
It's like my first day in L.A. He goes, you might as well go. And I didn't want to let him know that I was poor and I needed a place to stay. He was just like, you know, South Bay's really nice. And and I'm like, yeah, I bet it is.
I looked at like Hermosa Beach. My roommate, when I moved out, he was like, well, we should look there. That'll be a cool place. I heard that. Yeah. And you look there and you're like, oh, how much for one bedroom? $3,800. You know what? I'm going to look at my other options. And I know there was another place next door, but I'll definitely call you.
Now, does this just, like, building have away. An elevator to my suite? Because that's what I'm looking for.
How long has a doorman been here?
Just like, your brain's going, what kind of questions would rich people ask?
This reminds me, when all my high school friends used to go to Vegas for the first round of the NCAA tournament, college basketball tournament.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it was great. And we just gamble on every game, the over-under or the point spread, because it's pretty much a coin flip.
Right.
You know, they make the odds even enough. We would get one of those things out by the MGM, sit by the pool, the gazebos.
Cabana.
Yeah. We'd watch every game or go to the sports book. It was just so much fun.
That's awesome.
We figured out the only way to get into clubs, because we're all dorks, is to get restaurant reservations before it becomes a club and just stay there while they move it over.
That's
the only way, because we stood in line at the Palms once for like an hour, and they were like,
was that before you knew court?
Before I knew court, yeah.
Yeah.
This last time we were all there, I got them all into the Palms. Did I tell you that?
No.
I asked court, I was like, hey, my friend's all going to be there. Can I get into the Palms? The first time, we didn't move for an hour, and then my friend went to the front to investigate.
Yeah.
And he goes, they're only taking people off a special list. So we're all just standing in a line that's not moving at all. And we're like, oh, let's go play blackjack.
Yeah.
Like, my friends stayed in line longer. But yeah, the last time we went, I just went. I was like, hey, is it cool if Court McCown said hi? I could. And then the door guy was like, oh, all right. Yeah, I saw you at the comedy show. Yeah, come on in. You're fine. And all my friends were like, whoa. How'd you do that? Dude, eight dudes, no chicks.
Court is the coolest. Whenever I introduce Court him at the store, I go, Court's the coolest person that acknowledges me in public. Because, like, I have some friends that are cool, but if they see
not
me.
Not now, Steve.
Yeah,
there's
like,
people about.
Like, Paulie wouldn't say hi to me in certain situations.
He saw you at Wendy's, he would. But
yeah,
he has
but
to look
like,
around
if there
first.
Was hot chicks around, he wouldn't. Yeah. Court's that cool. He's like, oh, there's my buddy Simone. And I'm like.
Paulie would look at you and look around the room to make sure no one else is there. Like, like he's about to say a racist joke. Like, let me scan.
He'd whisper,
and then,
hey, Simone, you know I can't acknowledge we're friends here, right? Yeah, I get
you're
it.
You're cool and all, but. Go for my
you're not cool to other people, just to me. And that's what Court would do that to me before we were friends.
Yeah.
And that's why I always liked him.
Yeah.
That like
Court's a real relaxed dude.
Yeah, he's the man. And if you're ever in Vegas, he can get you everywhere.
Yeah.
You can feel like you're not a loser.
It's pretty nice.
Yeah, it's really cool.
So what were we just saying about?
My buddy let me stay at his place, and then I didn't know what to do, and I'm sleeping on the couch, and then I try to reach out to anybody I might know in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you do.
Know people.
No, I didn't know.
Wow. Had you already been doing comedy?
I had done some open mics in Baltimore, took time off, did like a bar show in Delaware, because there was no comedy then. It was dead.
Right.
Like now there's open mics everywhere back there.
You think you just didn't know where it was?
No, it was dead.
Really?
Yeah, I searched and scoured. Like I would do open mics in New York.
Really? You go that far?
Yeah, I'd go that far. Yeah,
because I remember, hold on though. I remember going to an open mic in Northern Virginia, and I know the Philadelphia scene might have been different.
Mm-hmm.
Plus you guys didn't have an A-level club at that time.
No.
But I remember somebody, it was like 2 years in, and I was talking to somebody else who was 2 years into comedy.
Right.
But they were there, and I was in L.A.
Right.
And so we were commiserating. We had similar experiences.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, yeah, it's just some open mic, you know, open mics like this. And there was like 65 regular people there. And I was like, bro, this is the best show I've done in a year.
Year. Yeah, it's amazing. I had done.
There's nothing like that.
In Baltimore, when I was living there, my first experience on stage, I did an open mic. There was a little side street that they used to close down when it was nice. It was called Water Street. And there was a comedy club there called Winchester's. I did the open mic there.
Yeah, Winchester's. I think I looked into that. Uh-huh.
Did 20 minutes my first time on stage.
Yeah. Wow.
And then I still knew kids from college, and I was like, look, if I promote a show here, let me split the door.
Okay.
And I was like, all right, $5 cover. I got to keep three. They sold out a beer that night.
Wow.
And I made like $300. And I'm like, I'm never going to get a job ever.
Why would you?
But then
you don't put into account. I can't.
And
do
that
this
was
every
probably
day.
The most. That's more money than I make now doing a set of comedy.
Jesus.
And that was like my second night on stage. I thought it was going to be so easy.
Mm-hmm.
I knew it was going to be hard, but I had no idea it was going to be this hard. So long story short, I'm in LA. I don't know anybody. I have like $1,500. I'm sleeping on a couch. My brother's fraternity. He gives me a tip on good pizza and wings. I go to this place called The Slice.
The Slice was the greatest.
The greatest. And Jules behind the counter was like, where are you from? I'm like, Philly. He goes, did you just get off the bus? I'm like, yeah, it's my first
much.
Day in town. And he was like, bro, he was like, I'm from Jersey. I could just tell. And he's like,
really?
What do you do? And it was the first time ever somebody, I'm now officially in LA.
And someone acknowledged you.
And they said, what do you do? And I said, I'm a comedian.
Ooh.
Yeah. And he goes, oh, do you know Joe Matarese? And I go, yeah. Like, he was the only comedian. Because I had done a show in Wilmington at this place called Bottle Caps.
Yeah.
I had done like two or three shows there. And the headliners were – that I worked with. I got to MC in a bar.
Yeah.
On a Wednesday night. The headliners were Matarese.
Yeah.
Florentine.
Whoa.
And Norton.
Whoa.
And I remember
– when was this?
Probably like 99.
Jesus.
And I remember thinking comedy was going to be easy until I saw Jim Norton – and I went, oh, my God. This
For a while,
is the...
yeah, before I knew who Jim Norton was, you were like, he's the best comic in the world.
In the world.
Yeah.
And I went, if this guy is this funny and he's driving from New York to do a gig in Wilmington, Delaware on a Wednesday night, I go, I have no shot. I go, it's never going to happen. So then I didn't get on stage for like a year after that. I was like, just work at the Eagles.
Yeah, fuck it.
Be happy you have a job. This guy's the funniest person I've ever seen, and he's doing a bar gig on
a
Wednesday.
It's like going into miming.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no future in it.
Yeah. It's not going to ever. And then I saw Norton on TV. Louis Anderson did a stand-up show that was filmed on the Santa Monica Pier.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay.
It came on.
And Norton got that?
Maybe after Live at the Apollo on Saturday nights.
Yeah.
It was late. Or maybe Friday nights late after Letterman or something.
Yeah.
And I remember going, holy shit, I did comedy with somebody that's been on TV. And that planet, that little seed in the back of my brain were like, you might want to pursue this. So then I had done some open mics at this place called the Laugh House in Philly.
Yeah.
All black club. First time on stage there. Literally booed off stage. Booed off stage.
Black clubs.
And I was like, I'm never doing comedy again. I quit comedy more times than I've quit drinking. I'm like, that was a bad experience. I'm never going to do that again. I thought this would make
grow.
Me feel good. I thought this would make me feel good. It made me feel worse. And life will just be easier without it in my life.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then this is how Matt Reese comes up again. So I get booed off stage, and I'm like, I'm never doing that again.
Yeah.
And then I used to work out at this gym called the Iron Sport Gym. That was, at the time,
it
was
such meathead roots.
Dude, this is the most meathead place ever. It used to be a gym where they gave you a punch code.
Yeah.
To the door that was a garage bay at an auto body place.
It would open up the garage door?
No, it was a door with a lock on it.
Yeah.
But the gym itself was just a garage at an auto body place.
Wow.
So they gave you the code to the gym. You could lift weights whenever you wanted to.
Wow.
So
throw tires against the wall.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's the greatest gym in America. It's the best.
Uh-huh.
It's so much fun. And then after that one night, it was like 11 o'clock at night, and I didn't want to go home. I was living with my parents.
Yeah.
I was like, I'll just drive back to that comedy club and just watch.
Okay.
So it was open mic. It was already almost over, and I just wanted to watch. And there was a kid that I had met before, and I'm not certain, but it may have been Kevin Hart. Honestly.
He's from Philadelphia.
It may have been, because he was so funny but so nice.
You know who really talks about Kevin Hart a lot is Big Jay Oakerson. Because he was like the big guy in Philadelphia when he started coming up.
Okay. It was probably Kevin, because I remember seeing Big Jay at that open mic.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Way back then.
This
probably
is
right
like
when he was starting, too.
98, 99. And he would close out the open mic, Big Jay.
Really?
Yeah, he was really nice.
He started in black rooms, too.
Yeah, it was the Laugh House. They did open mic like on Tuesday or Wednesday.
He has a great story about what he did at Montreal about – it wasn't Kevin Hart. It was somebody else. Fuck, another black guy, another short black guy. Everyone's shorter than me. But Robinson.
Craig Robinson?
Keith Robinson.
Yeah, he's a comic from Philly.
Yeah,
he's funny.
That's what it is. And he said he took all those guys under his wings and said, hey, man, you can't do that pandering stuff anymore. And Jay was like, you're an idiot. It's working great. And he's like, you're stripping down to your tidy whities.
Yes.
And black people are laughing at you.
Right.
But he didn't get it. But black rooms are fucking weird and tough. And like, that's supposed to succeed and you're doing your jokes?
Dude, I remember doing a joke about Full House, the TV show Full House, and getting booed off stage, and I got so drunk. And
that's on Opposite Wayans Brothers, you fucking sellout.
I felt so bad.
Really?
It was the worst I've ever felt.
They're merciless black rooms. I love it.
So then I go down just to watch, and this kid that was nice to me, I honestly think it may have been Kevin Hart.
Yeah?
He was just really cool, and then Matt Reese was going to come in and headline that weekend. And I was like, well, I'll come back that weekend. Maybe he'll remember me, and I'll just talk to him.
Yeah.
Because I always
just wanted to hang out.
Just wanted to hang out.
Yeah.
And I remember Matt Reese was like, dude, you can't quit. He goes, if it's something you want to do, you got to do it. I was like, all right, I am. So then I did the open mic the following week.
Yeah.
And I remember at the time, like, I think it was DMX was coming out and was really big. And the DJ did me a favor and played DMX.
To you coming up?
To me coming up. So the crowd was happy that DMX was playing.
Oh, yeah.
And then I was just legitimately enjoying the song.
Yeah.
And they thought I was hysterical just because I was like I was loving it.
Yeah.
And I had a great set. And it's amazing the difference between a shitty set and a great set. If you have a shitty set, when you're starting off, you're like, I'm quitting. And you have a great set, I'm like, I'm going to have a TV show.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was complete polar opposites.
You're like, I killed. No one noticed. Oh, my God, I'm the best comic ever.
Exactly.
So it just changes who you are.
It changes everything.
For like a long time. Not for like an hour or two, for like days and weeks.
No, it gave me enough belief where that summer I'm like, I'm going to go to New York.
Jesus.
And I killed my first time on stage in New York. It was the Boston Comedy Club in the Village.
I remember that one. Wayne Rader put me
people
up there.
From Philly drove up with me to watch me do comedy. People that I worked with at the Eagles drove up with me, carpooled to the Village to watch me do an open mic.
Wow.
This is how small the comedy world is. Norton headlines that open mic.
Really?
I get off, bro, I murdered.
Yeah.
I murdered. I hadn't been on stage in like a year. I kill it. I come off stage, this little old lady, who I was like, maybe she's an angel. This old lady, I went outside. You know when you have the chills, like all that audience energy?
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure. I'm like, what's happening? I didn't realize that an audience gives you energy. And
yeah.
So I walk outside and the hair on my arms, I go, I just killed it. At an open mic in New York. I got to do like eight minutes.
In New York. That must have been a big thing.
Oh,
like,
huge
that's
thing.
New York City.
New York City. I go, this is it.
Uh-huh.
I walk outside and this old lady follows me out. She goes, what is your name? She goes, I'm writing it down. Steve Simone. She goes, you have it. I go, what? She goes, and she introduced herself. She was this wonderful. She was definitely Jewish and awesome.
Yeah.
I've been watching comedy for over 30 years. My name is Estelle. Like, she was great. Right? She was fantastic. And she goes like this. She goes, has anybody ever asked for your autograph? I go, no. She goes, I will be your first autograph.
Wow.
Right. I think her name was Estelle. Was something. She was like, write it to Estelle. And I want the date. Write the date on it. And you know what she told me? She goes, the only other time I was this sure, there was a young man I saw on a – it was either a play or a comedy because she did all that stuff.
Oh, well, this story is either going to be something like huge like Steve Martin or somebody nobody liked.
No, better.
Okay.
His name was Tom Hanks.
Oh, Jesus.
Nobody knew who he was. And I'm telling you, you have it. And then
– of course, you internalize that.
Yeah. So I'm like, no, I have it. I'm
Estelle gonna be, knows. Estelle knows. You're going to say she's wrong?
Exactly.
Yeah.
So then you go back and there's no open mics, and then I'm just like, all right, I quit my job. I'm supposed to move out here. My buddy from the gym used to sell beer.
Yeah.
Like, he worked for a distributor. He goes, we're doing a comedy contest with Bass Al. I hadn't been
out
on
here?
Stage. This is in Philly.
Okay.
I hadn't been on stage for like a year. I go, I had no job. I go, well, I'll just enter the comedy contest and see what happens. And he goes, if you make it to the finals of the comedy contest, it's hosted by Pauly Shore. And I'm like, no way. Because I was thinking, I go, well, if I never.
Yeah, you knew Pauly before.
This is what happened.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right? So I enter the contest. I make it through the first round, which is outside on the deck of a Philly bar in Manayunk.
Oh, my God. I would dread doing a show.
I wouldn't do that now.
No.
I'd go, you know what? I don't need the stage time.
One, I don't like contests. Two, outside.
Oh, outside at a bar in the spring in Philly when everybody's wasted.
Yeah.
I did well enough to get them to laugh. They're like, you go on to the next round.
I don't care. Just get out of the way of the bar.
Yeah. I go enter the contest, the finals. It's hosted by Pauly. It's all the beer you can drink. So I'm like, they're not paying me. I'm not going to win the contest because I'd been raised to think that everything was a scam and everything was rigged. So I'm like, they're not going to give me a trip to London.
That's what it was? Trip to
London?
Yeah,
trip to London. So I just got wasted after my set. And Pauly came, I smashed it.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, smashed it.
But you're like, doesn't matter.
Doesn't
matter. It's not a contest.
Yeah. I'm like, I'm not going to win. But okay. Pauly calls me back. Pauly's not only, he's emceeing the contest.
Oh, wow.
He never does that.
How much did they pay him to do that?
He must have gotten a
ton. Was he there a day early for like the
I don't know.
Improv or something? That's weird.
No. Yeah, it was a one-nighter. It was a one-nighter where he hosted the contest, was celebrity judge, and then did a set at the end.
Okay.
He calls me back out. Because I used to do a joke about seventh grade dances and about how my friends would get me to break dance, and I thought how that would get me girls or something.
Yeah.
So then Pauly calls me back out. Place is going crazy. I didn't really even bring it. It was like the ultimate bringer show. And we both did like the worm or the centipede off stage together. And I'm like,
cool.
Oh my God. Because I didn't even think I was going to move to LA at that time. And I thought that would be the highlight of my comedy career.
Yeah.
To say I got to break dance on stage one night with Pauly Shore.
What if that is the highlight of somebody's career?
It could be. Dude, it hasn't gotten much better since. So,
I feel like it's still top 10.
Definitely. And then I got off stage and he goes, bro, you should be at the store. I'm like, what's the store? He goes, the comedy store, bro. It's my mom's club.
Yeah, I call that sometimes. Like, there are people like, which store? What kind of store?
Yeah, I didn't know.
Oh, no,
like,
the store.
I'm like, what store? And he goes, the comedy store, dude. My mom runs it. He's like, you should be there. You're funny, bro.
Wow. Pauly Shore is really, like, nurturing.
Dude, he helped me out.
It's nice to have someone like that believe in you.
So, dude, to have that randomness.
Even like the Wheeze. Even someone like that. It's still
randomly,
like, wow.
Estelle,
you're
Pauly Shore, seeing Norton on TV.
Yeah.
Having Joe Matarese be nice to me. And then he's headlining the comedy club where I got booed off stage. I took all these little things as signs. Ugh. As signs from God that this is my path.
Yeah.
And I firmly – the only reason I haven't quit comedy is because I believe it's a calling. I think it's
okay,
so
I'll give you
impossible.
Calling, but I'm not going to give you those are signs.
Right. Oh, yeah. It's all open for interpretation.
Okay.
But so then Pauly and Dean.
Dean Gilber?
Yes, was his road manager at the time.
Oh, yeah.
So Dean's got all the T-shirts and stuff. I remember helping Dean load up his T-shirts and putting them in Pauly's limo. I carried boxes.
Oh, yeah.
And they were like, wow, this kid's really cool. He wins the contest, and he's carrying boxes. Dean writes down a phone number. He goes, bro, when you make it to L.A., give me a call.
Wow.
I'm like, all right. So now I'm in the pizza place in Santa Monica. I meet Jules, go back, all the people that I'm with the couches that I'm staying at, they're all at work. So I called Dean. He doesn't, like, remember me, kind of. And then he's like, you know what? They do open mic at the store on Sundays. Just go there. And
that's another one. Call me. I'll help you. And then it's like, you're actually calling me?
So I do the. I show up at the open mic. I don't get up. Because remember you used to have to sign up on Saturday nights?
No.
You used to have to sign up. They'd put the list out Saturday night for the open mic on Sunday.
Late Saturday night. But then you sign up for a week later.
Yeah, it was awful.
You sign up on Sunday for the next Sunday.
You had to pay to park.
Oh, yeah. They wouldn't let you park at the store. And people are like, get out of here. You can't be here. And people are like, why?
I just want to get on the open mic list.
I just want to sign my name and then leave and come back at 7 whenever they're...
Saturday night on the Sunset Strip, you can't find a meter.
Well, they're put out Saturday night at like 2 a.m. So they didn't have to do... No,
it was like midnight.
Oh, that's stupid. Why would they invite the Chuds over on Saturday night at midnight? Man, that place would run bad for a while.
Yeah, I don't know. So then I'm like, oh, fuck this. This sucks.
Yeah.
And then
if you weren't one of the first 40 names on the list, you just don't even get to pick a number.
You don't even get a chance. Yeah.
If you are, then you get 1 in 2 chance.
God, it was awful.
Yeah.
And then Jules winds up giving me a job at the pizza place.
Okay. Delivering
and working the counter. So within 2 days of LA, I'm working at a pizza place. Then a buddy of his is moving out of a 3-bedroom apartment. He was like, can you afford $650 a month? I'm like, I guess so.
Yeah. $650 a month. Yeah.
And then I get my apartment through Jules at the pizza place. I have a job delivering pizzas and working the counter at a pizza place.
Yeah.
Dean calls and I get for $50 a day. I was working 12 hours a day doing production on Pauly's movie. Pauly Shore's Dead.
Yeah.
And that's
50 bucks a day.
$50 a day, 12 hours
just
a day.
Going crazy.
Taking out the trash, moving Pauly couches.
Is the king of unpaid interns.
Oh my God, bro.
However he can with money.
It was awful, brutal work, but it got me my job answering phones at the store.
Sure, you got you in.
Got me in.
That's what I started on the phones.
And then I went from phones.
And you didn't even know what the Comedy Store was.
I knew what it was in legend. Oh. I didn't know what it was in reality.
I didn't even know what it was. I passed by it looking for a job at the Laugh Factory. I'm like, oh, that looks like a comedy club, too.
I knew the Comedy Store because I remember hearing Dice on Stern
talking about
the store. And Kinison on Stern talking about the store.
Yeah.
And I remember Jim Carrey coming out on the 20th anniversary with a sock on his pecker.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you saw that thing beforehand?
Yeah. Wow. Dude, I knew of the store. Like, I read about the store. I was a comedy nerd.
Oh, wow.
I remember the special shot at the store.
Yeah.
Like, I knew the Comedy Store was... When I map-quested directions from Philly to L.A.
You map-quested to the Comedy Store?
To the Comedy Store, 8433 Sunset.
Wow, they tortured you forever.
Tortured me forever.
So let's talk more about the struggle. So you got here, and you're
delivering pizzas and answering phones.
And just trying to make it as a comic.
Just trying to make it as a comic.
And so then you're like, okay.
Then my car dies.
The way in is at the Comedy Store. You get to be an employee.
Right.
And then the old way, when Mitzi was still around, was she sees you eventually. The idea was she'll eventually see you and be like, that's great, you're a paid regular.
Correct.
And then you'll start getting spots, and then people from the Tonight Show will see you and or whatever. That's not all realistic, but some stages take longer than others for certain people.
You think that like you get your job at the store answering phones, and then you can graduate to a job at night working the door of the cover booth?
Yeah, move up.
Move up.
You get a door job. That's like even better.
Door job is the coolest job at the store.
You can just watch comedy and learn.
Right. And you can get tips.
Mm-hmm.
Because remember, we were only getting $25 a shift then.
$25 a shift. You had to be there at 8 to open the doors at 8:30.
Yep.
And you were there till 2:15 to 2:30.
Yep, for $25.
6 hours.
Yeah.
What does that break down to?
$4 an hour?
Oh. God. Yeah, you had to get tips.
Had to get tips.
Work it however you want. Oh, you want the front row? That's going to cost you.
Yep.
And they get in. They're like, all right, here's $10. And you get in. There's six people in the room.
And then people would fight for that main room front. Main room front. Shift.
Yeah. You'd save the fronts.
There were kids that just kept the main room front shift that weren't even doing comedy anymore because they would sell the booths.
Just for money. That's right. Main room front. Jason Washington. Ron Lewis did it for a while.
Yep.
Ramos kept it for a while.
Yep.
After they were dumping employees, that was the last shift they gave up. Caparillo kept that one for a while.
Yep.
They would fight for that main room front for New Year's because you could sell booths for like $100 a piece.
Yep. Live off that.
Yeah. And then when somebody
I even got fucked out of those shifts. I got fucked every way possible at the store.
And so it wasn't happening as fast as you wanted it to.
Oh my God, it took me 8 years to get past it.
Eight years to get made a paid regular. From the time you got a phone job.
Yeah, I didn't get past. You were there when I got past. Remember we were in the coffee shop?
Uh-huh. In the coffee shop?
on Hollywood Boulevard. We were at that La Brea and Hollywood.
Oh, yeah. And you got
you
a
were
call.
Because I was on the road a bunch by that point.
Yeah, what, were you writing or something? Or just meeting?
Yeah, we're just hanging out. Because I was in and out of town.
Are we writing up that idea that's going to go nowhere? Should I just tell everybody what the idea was? Because it's literally never going to happen.
Yeah, don't say the name because I'm using that for a script.
Oh, okay.
You can talk about the concept.
Okay. It was just a bunch of dweebs, I guess.
Yeah, nerd fights.
Nerds. And, yeah, training mixed martial arts.
Yeah.
And kind of like Bigger Loser style where it's like you really put him through training for like a month.
Yeah,
but we're
months.
Talking about 120-pound, you know, 5'11 people or super fat guys.
Yeah, people that have gotten picked on their whole life. Yeah. The thing was teach them how to fight.
Yeah, and
they're
going to lose weight and bulk up because you have to when you're training. Like, yeah. It just happens. Eat better, like, whatever.
I wanted to go through the program.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then see if they could actually, like, win a fight. Or even just fighting would be, like, overcoming and, like...
Yeah, overcoming those fears and fight each other and...
I finally pitched that to Dana White.
Uh-huh.
I was like, hey, I was so nervous. Like, do you take pitches? And he's like, yeah, let's go right now. Come into my room. I was like, what?
Are you serious?
Yeah, I was like, okay. And then he's so cool, that guy.
He's an American legend.
Yeah.
He's an icon.
Yeah, he is.
Like, they're going to read about Dana White in business schools for the next 100 years.
They're not going to remember Bud Selig as long as they remember Dana
No. It takes something from zero to a billion-dollar enterprise
Zero. He was losing money. That UFC was losing shitloads of money. And he's like, just give it to me. Let's try.
Genius.
Yeah, but I told it to him, and he goes, ah, I've heard that before. It's something like that. We don't want to do that. I was like, okay.
Thanks
and
so much for your time, sir.
Yeah, I was like, okay, no big deal. And he goes, so what's up? What else is going on, Ari? How you doing? Like, he made it really cool right after that. Like, let's just keep talking. You want water or anything?
Oh, that's
he made
so
it right
cool.
back to, like, let's be friends again.
That's
not
so
interested
cool.
in that, but no big deal.
God, that's why he's so cool. successful.
Yeah. People like him.
You have to be cool.
Yeah. And he cusses.
Yeah.
That's nice, too. Okay, so.
He's real.
So it took you 8 years. I remember that. Because you got made a manager of
Kaiser,
which was, at the time, the kiss of death.
Kiss of death.
She'll never see you as a comic.
Never see you as
a
comic.
Manager.
You yeah, and phones, you could get fired immediately.
You could, oh, yeah, and those are the shifts.
Do you remember?
Managers where people take scapegoats.
Yeah, always.
What happened? What didn't happen? Fire Steve.
Yep.
He must have done it.
Oh, my God. So I worked every job there, bro.
Fixed. Yeah.
I got made a manager after like a month of answering phones.
Mm.
And
no one told you like, oh, if you're a comic, you can't do that.
I would get my balls broken for – I remember I would sell the main room show.
Really push people. Like,
really
go,
push people
it.
In there. And then Mitzi was like, oh, get him off the phones. He sounds like a car salesman. Because I was so happy to be at the store. What's that?
I think people can hear the tick-tocking of my clock.
I don't know. If they do, so what? Is it weird?
No, I don't know.
We'll listen to it afterwards.
I don't know what like sound stuff for a podcast. Whatever.
I don't know.
Oh, hold on. Let me stop it. People can just tell me.
Perfect.
Yeah. If this is wake... This is way clearer now. Please tell me. But go ahead. All right. Go ahead.
Okay. So I was still answering phones.
Yeah.
And then working at the pizza place. I had two jobs out here for like my first 6-7 years. There was 1 year, honestly.
Slice in the store?
Yeah. Or Arnie's in the store.
Oh, Arnie's.
Or,
yeah, you worked. Oh, you mean you had at least two jobs at
all times. At least two jobs at all times.
God, you're like a fucking Mexican.
Dude, in all honesty, there was one
Jamaican
year.
For the East Coasters.
The Fat James story. Where I did not have a day off, literally not a day off.
Yeah,
for a year.
See, here's the deal. Oh, that's crazy. But here's the deal. When you moved here, as people moved, you know, before you and after you, you would start seeing people at this time. Like Renazisi, probably he moved after you, right?
Yep.
And had he already gotten punked by the time before you got?
I was working the yeah.
Yeah, so it's like you see people start to succeed.
Yep.
And you're like, fuck. Well, it's possible.
Yep.
These people are in my range comedically.
Yep.
They're my friends and my colleagues.
Yes.
So they're making it. So it's like, okay. So it's possible, but it's like, but I'm just not doing it. I'm still working two jobs.
Yeah.
So like, what's the deal?
Well, I remember something Rogan told me.
Yeah.
That always stayed with me, and he was 100% right.
What was it?
By this point, I was working the back door at the store.
Okay.
And he was holding court back there. And you know, Joe's cool as shit.
Yeah.
And he said that fame comes to you in stages. And he goes, it has to, or else you would lose your fucking mind.
You just become mad. That's why reality stars, that's like all
they
once.
Lose their mind.
Yeah, they do lose
like
their mind.
Like that Susan Boyle chick. She
oh, yeah,
lost
she went
her
crazy,
shit.
Huh?
Because what he said was, he goes, Steve, you're funny. You know, because you remember how Rogan wouldn't watch us do comedy because he liked us?
Oh, yeah. He didn't want to hate us.
Didn't want to hate us.
Yeah.
And I remember my first, in my mind, my graduation night at the Comedy Store came 7 years before I ever got my button as a paid regular. I was came home from Thanksgiving of like 2001. So I'd already been doing open mics at the store for a year.
By the way, I hate forgetting this stuff like this. You're doing that same show you did with Dom last year. You're doing that this year by yourself, right?
I'm doing the late. Dom's doing the early show. I'm doing the late show. Yeah, Dom's doing shows, but they had to have somebody else feature for him.
Uh-huh.
So I just wanted to be able to.
So it's an 8 and a 10 o'clock show?
Yeah, and I'm doing the 10 o'clock. At Helium.
At Helium on Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving.
Drunk Wednesday, yeah.
Drunk Wednesday. Okay, that'll be fun.
Yeah, it'll be great. Okay. I can't wait to see everybody.
Okay.
If
anybody hears about Simone from this, tell them you heard from this.
That would be awesome.
It makes me feel better. When those things get back to me, it makes me feel good. But go ahead.
That would be awesome. And I remember Joey Diaz was hosting open mic.
Yeah.
And I was just came back from being at home, and I was like, fuck this city. Fuck this place. I have a family. I have friends. I don't give a shit if I make it. And it was the first time I really just opened up on stage and was like, talked, and I killed it in an open mic spot. And Joey Diaz was like, that's it. That's it. And then as I was walking off stage, Rogan was in the back of the room, and he came up and hugged me. He was like, dude, you're fucking funny.
Oh, yeah?
He goes, I always liked you. You're a good kid. But if you weren't funny, I couldn't have been your friend.
It really is weird like that. You lose all respect for them. It's so weird.
It's crazy.
When Michael Richards started coming around the Comedy Store, and I don't know that guy at all. And a lot of me has changed. I'm like, whatever. He is what he is. He probably did comedy for a little bit.
Yeah.
But in the first like few days, everyone's like, oh, it's Michael Richards.
Right.
Wow. This is way before the
incident.
The incident, yes. This is way before that. And we're like, whoa, cool. But then he would be on stage, and it's a guy, a comic, who was severely out of practice and who hadn't really developed to the point he should have with his level of fame. He stopped doing stand-up.
Right.
So people, within a week, were like, ugh, whatever.
Yeah.
I'm not talking to that guy. Just because he was like, oh, you're not that good on stage.
It's amazing. Well, that's what's so cool about the Comedy Store.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the greatest comics in the world and open micers,
they're
all the same. They're all just comics.
What do you got? What do you got?
And you're respected. It's like a fight club. It's like, it doesn't matter if you have the title.
Yeah.
Can you get in the ring?
All those people, too, are like all the people that aren't paid regulars. I know I was when I wasn't, and you were when you weren't. And, Freddie told me the same story, Freddie Soto.
Ah, the best.
And then Tony Hinchcliffe is going through the same thing where he's like, I'm not a paid regular. I'm looked down upon. But it's like
none of the paid regulars
care.
Nobody cares.
They don't care about that status that you think you care
about. It's funny that you bring up Freddie Soto because when he passed, I remember he passed away. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I remember talking to his parents. And I mean, I was distraught. It still hurts me
to this
day.
Everybody.
It hurt everybody. And I remember like trying to tell his parents what a special guy he was.
Yeah.
And what it boiled down to with Freddie and me is Freddie reminded me that I wasn't wasting my life. Like, you come out here and you see everybody passing by you.
Yeah.
And you go, is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? Is this struggle just a waste?
Yeah.
And I remember just Freddie's influence was always there to tell me that I'm not wasting my time. I'm not wasting my life.
Yeah.
Because it took Freddie a long time to get past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she used to compare me to Freddie a lot, or it was like, or people used to anyway. It's like, it took him forever. It took me 4.5 years.
She told me, she was like, oh, you're my new Freddie.
Ugh. That sort of thing was like, I know that seems like you're trying to be nice, but that's like killing me.
Killing me. So Rogan once told me, he said, fame comes to you in stages.
Uh-huh.
He was like, you're funny, but if you did the Tonight Show tomorrow night and you killed it, you would lose your mind. He goes, I know you don't think so. But he goes, let's talk. He goes, it all works out the way it's supposed to. He was like, right now we're friends, right? He goes, you don't think of me as the guy from TV. I go, no. He goes, you think of me as Joe? I go, yeah. He was like, but if you were some idiot in some Florida or something, you just saw me in the mall, you'd be like, oh my God, it's that guy from TV.
Yeah.
He's like, but you don't think like that. He goes, that's the first stage. He goes, you have friends that are famous.
That was with Dom. That was the thing. I remember when I saw it at Dublin's, when Dublin's used to be, it's closed now. The whole place is closed.
Yeah, but that was the shit.
It was the hot show of the week in Los Angeles.
I got to do it once. It was awesome.
I did it once or twice, something like that. But it was like, there was an upstairs and a downstairs of this bar. They packed the upstairs. Jay Davis and Ahmed ran it.
It was the coolest thing ever.
I'm convinced that's where Dane Cook became a superstar.
Absolutely.
Because he was the hottest comic at the hottest show in LA.
Absolutely.
And everyone who was there, audience-wise, was 21 to 30.
Yep.
Super hot. Probably 21 to 27.
It was the first time ever I thought of comedy as being cool.
Yeah, it was just a cool place to be.
Yeah,
and I remember they had a little comics wing in the back or in the side.
Dude, you remember Big Craig, the bouncer there? He actually worked.
Oh yeah,
I remember. I was so nervous because I was doing the cold open.
Oh yeah, they would have a pre-show.
Yeah, I did the cold open. I went up
and brought on Jay Davis.
And Jay was out of the. He was out of town, and I brought on Ahmed, and Ahmed hooked me up with that spot. Ahmed was always looking out for us.
Because
he was always looking out for the Comedy Store door guys.
Yeah.
And he didn't know who I was. I wasn't friends with him at the time. He was just like, yeah, you want to do a spot at Dublin's? I was like, do I? And I remember I was so nervous. Big Craig saw how nervous I was.
Yeah.
And he opened this side door for me and let me pace up and down the steps.
Oh, that place.
Yeah.
Towards right before you go on stage there?
Yes.
On the side, yeah.
Yep.
Oh, that's cool.
And then he high-fived me when I got off. And everybody high-fived me.
That place was hot.
Hot.
And industry was there.
Oh, speaking of industry, that – dude, I killed it so hard that night that about 4 months later, there was some like show busy guy that had two assistants with him.
Yeah.
That was at the store to see somebody, and he sees my face. And he goes, oh, my God, are you going on? He goes, you guys have to see this guy.
Yeah, and you weren't going on.
I go, no, I'm not going on. He goes, well, what are you doing? I go, I'm
just at the Comedy Store?
At the Comedy Store. I go, I'm working the door. He laughs. He goes, no, seriously, what are you doing? And I went, I'm working the door. And he went, I can't believe that.
Oh, man. Man. It's a lot of it's just like, give me the shot that I know I can.
The shot.
It's like, okay, so I went up at Dublin's. Let me up again. Yep. Let me up at the store. I can be in front of these people.
Yeah. Oh, especially like the store now is it's a much better product.
Yeah.
But yes. When we were door guys,
no
we
was
were funnier
there. Oh, yeah.
Than the vast majority of the guys going up.
There were people there that it was just like, what? Yeah. What is this?
Yeah, because
Mitzi was in that in-between stage. She used to be there every single day, six nights a week. She would be in her office late at night, hear somebody killing in the belly room.
Yep.
And she had a side door to be able to open the door and peek out like, who is this? All right, you know what? I'm going to make them paid regular. I like them. She was there all the time. Then she was there only for showcases and Saturday night.
Yes.
So Sunday and Saturday. So anyone who worked out during the week, she passed them and then lost track of them completely.
Yep.
Had no idea if they were good or bad.
Right.
And that was a lot of that.
Oh, a ton of that.
There was a lot of it.
And I would say probably like me, you, and Ren Azizi, in my brain, I've always said that we were like the last three that she really knew.
Uh-huh.
Because the time we got dressed down at
Palm Springs.
Palm Springs.
Who was Ren Azizi just telling that to like 2 days ago or yesterday? It was horrible.
It was horrible, but it made me feel good because it was the first time she ever acknowledged me as a comic and said I was hers.
Because
I was her personal assistant at the time.
The deal was we opened for Pauly in Palm Springs. He invited me, you, and Steve over to ZC to open for him in Palm Springs, a city gig.
Yep.
We're like, oh, awesome. We got a hotel room.
Yeah.
Right? We're like, oh, this is cool. This is a road fucking gig.
Paid money.
Yeah. Paid money. $200, something like that.
Yeah.
Hotel. Yeah. So we get, and a show. A road show. It's like amazing. We're doing mostly open mics.
Yep.
So, and by the way, open mics around the country are not like open mics in LA. The open mics in LA are horrible.
Horrible.
You're pretty much performing only in front of other comics
that hate you
or drunks. Yeah, they hate you. They just want to go up. They're not listening. They're going over their notes. Once
they
go on,
comics
they leave.
Are dicks, especially early on in their career.
Yeah.
I think if you stay in this business, it'll humble you to the point where like you have to.
And you realize everyone's the same. We're all just trying to make jokes. So I'm not angry at somebody
other.
For being bad.
No. Like
yeah, you're trying. You failed on that one. It's okay.
Dude, this is such a near impossible thing to do with your life.
Yeah.
And it's been so brutally awful for me that I would never want to make it worse for anybody else.
Yeah, it's like almost like, hey, guys, it's not like we're in competition.
Never.
We're all together. The rest of the world's our competition.
Dude, it's like just be cool, dude.
Yeah.
Why? And I'm starting to see that change a little bit. But I remember walking off stage from Gower Gulch open mic once
because
the other comics were such dicks. They were making a mess. They were making.
Oh, you
noise.
Left in the middle.
I was like, the host, and I was like, "Fuck this," and just walked home.
But
I didn't have a car for 5 years.
But we were out there, and then we got the word like Scotty Shore came. He's Paulie's older brother.
Yep.
The coolest Shore.
Yep.
And he was like, hey, my mom's coming. We're like, what?
What?
Oh, fuck.
No.
We were going to have this great show.
Yeah.
It was going to be a road room. We're going to have a great fucking show. Mitzi's here, motherfucker. It's so bad.
And then I remember it was like, who's going to go first? Yeah. And I remember going, I'll go first. And you guys
but
were like, why?
But Scotty had go ahead.
And I was like, you guys at least have a shot.
Like you're falling on the hand grenade.
Yeah. I go, I'll just go first. I'll just do it. She's never going to pass me.
But Scotty said this. He goes, no, man, that's how she passed Bobby Lee. That's how she passed Paul
Rodriguez. No, Paulie told us that.
Oh, Paul, okay.
Paulie gave us that cool speech.
Yeah, he was like, guys, you're going to get to go showcase in, for Mitzi instead of for, in front of an open mic crowd.
Right.
You're getting to do it in front of a road crowd. You guys are going to kill and she's going to see that.
Dude.
And we're like, oh.
Yeah. He thought he was doing us a favor.
Yeah. We're like, wow. Yep. Maybe you're right.
Dude. And then, dude, Paulie was cool that night when he gave us the speech about how in this city you just hear no.
Uh-huh.
No.
What was that? I don't remember this.
All right. We're like, oh, shit. Mitzi's in the room.
Yeah.
And, like, I don't think people know. Like, she was the authority for your existence if you got trapped in that Comedy Store circle.
Yeah. She could tell you whether you're good or bad, whether you should have pride in your work or not, whether you should keep going or not, whether you could get spots. You need spots. That's your lifeblood.
And there were guys that were getting main room spots, making 100, 150 a week.
Yeah.
That were paying their rent at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Off of 15 minutes worth of work a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
That wasn't us. But
no, it was not us.
Dude, and I remember Shelly was with Mitzi that night. I come off stage, murder. I had a great set.
Killed
it. And she goes, that was awesome. And I go, no, it wasn't. She goes, what? I go, I've never done that good in front of Mitzi. Something bad's going to happen. Like, I was already programmed so negative.
Because
I thought my set would – I thought I would eat it. You two guys would get past.
Yeah.
And that would be it.
Yeah.
But I went out and murdered, and I went, this isn't going to work.
We all killed.
We killed
each one of us. It was like, cool, Simone, one down. And then I was like, I forgot who went next. I think maybe me.
I think it was.
And then I was like, oh, that was – I'm super
happy.
Yeah,
and I'm like waiting for you. I'm like, this is – you did it. You killed it.
And then Brenna completes it. And we're like, that is it, guys.
We did it. This is our night.
We all did it.
We did it.
And then – so we're sitting there in the back. We don't want to go say hi to her or anything. You're so nervous to even talk to her.
Right.
To even to say – you revert your eyes.
Yep.
She used to get a kick out of that when people would like, why are they all walking weird around me? Because they're frightened of you, Mitzi.
Yep.
Oh, good. But so then we're selling to Paulie's T-shirts. Brenna Zisi's always doing
No, dude. Paulie was on stage when Shelly
came. Called us over?
Yes.
Oh, we were setting up the T-shirts.
We weren't even to that point yet. We were backstage.
So the T-shirts were after?
Yeah. We had to set up the shirts with the bad news.
Oh,
was awful.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so Shelly called us over.
She goes into the bet. We're in the green room drinking beers going, I don't know. And I'm going, dude, I don't think it's good. And Renny's, stop being a pussy, Simone. You killed it. Ari killed it. Let's have some drinks. Let's go gamble.
It was such a great moment because it wasn't like.
And I'm buying into it.
Yeah, it wasn't like 80% of us did well. So that's really.
Dude,
like,
we all killed it. We all passed. Yeah. If that was a test.
Yeah.
We all fucking passed.
Yes.
And then Renny's easy with his positive energy. He's like, what do you, stop being a pussy. Have a drink. Yeah. Ari, drink. Let's get the waitress back here. We'll have some drinks. We'll gamble. We'll be 200. We'll go play blackjack. We'll turn into 1,000. We'll have the best night ever. Shelly comes into the back. She goes, I go, it's not good, is it? She goes, and she's shaking her head like she witnessed a crime.
Really?
Yeah. And she goes, Mitzi wants to see you guys.
I remember being, Mitzi wants to see you guys. And I was like, here comes the good news. I wasn't even aware that I was walking up on a plank.
Because we were in the back. She calls us to the back of the room, to the back table.
Back of the
showroom.
Yeah.
Well, so the show's going on. Remember the show was going on. We didn't have the T-shirt set up yet because Paulie was still on stage. Renny had just gotten off.
Yeah, we had to kneel.
Kneel down in front of her like children.
There were no chairs.
No chairs.
No seats. No one would get up.
She's not taught. She's talking this. Listen to me. You're not ready.
We're like, ready for what? What?
We just did it. How are we not ready?
You're not paid regulars. I'm like, we know. That's why we're here.
Right.
She goes, no, it means you can't get paid for comedy. You can't do paid comedy until I say you can. We're like,
and I was so fucking pissed.
I was just sad. I wasn't at the point of rebellion yet.
I was so pissed.
I was just like, but no.
Yeah, but then
because
you remember what she said?
It's only paid at the Comedy Store.
Right.
You get paid work other places.
You want to work other places and get lost on the road? Go be one of those assholes.
Yeah. I was like, what?
And she goes, and remember, I had to drive around in the Comedy Store van.
Yeah, me too.
She was like, you know how many names are on the van? And we're like, I don't know.
22, 23, something like that. Something, I don't know. What?
She goes, it was like 28 or something. She goes, you want to know what they all have in common?
What?
They're all fucking millionaires.
First of all, Tomayo Otsuki is not a millionaire.
Right. But she said it.
Yeah. They're all millionaires.
She goes, and you want to know why they're millionaires? Because they did it my way. They listened to me.
Wow.
So what do you want to do? You want to go work the road and be a nobody? We want to listen to what the fuck I have to say and do it my way.
And we're like, we're just opening for your son.
Yep.
What road? What are you talking
about?
But
I remember going, well, at least – now she thinks of me as a comic.
Really?
Yeah. Because up until that point, I had managed the club. I was assistant talent coordinator. I bartended. I worked the door. I worked cover booth.
Yeah.
I worked all the jobs.
Phones,
I worked
booth,
lot once, twice.
Door. Never manager like you.
It was awful.
But phones, booth, door. I was a waitress a couple times when nobody showed up. And usually from on stage.
I've never done that.
I would take orders from on stage.
That's hysterical.
Because they wouldn't show up till like 7:45 and the open mic would start at 7. So I'd be like, what do you want? And I would just write it down and go get it for them.
Would you get tips?
I don't think I would even take it. Or I just gave the tab to whatever waitress would, you know,
that's
come
hysterical.
Through. I wouldn't take their money. Yeah. But I did the website for a while. She fired me off that and made me cry. This is terrible. What's this button? It's for directions. People know where it is, okay? They don't need directions. I'm like, Mitzi, I work the phones. People,
that's
one of the main
questions.
Yeah, like, how do I get there? It's just directions from different links. Like, if you don't want directions, you don't click on this link that says directions and has a little picture of a car. It's a millimeter big. And she goes, where are you from? Are you from Los Angeles? I was like, no, you know I'm not. She goes, well, that's why you don't know where the store is. Everybody knows where it is.
Oh,
it's like, all right, she goes, take it down. You're fired. Meanwhile, I made the website. It had a lineup from fucking 7 years ago on there. And that was their main, like, this is our show. And
Bruce
like,
Baby Man Ball, Gallagher.
But I remember that conversation with her, not the fire, but like at that Palm Springs gig. And then that's when I realized it was all a farce, because then later she was mad at me and I realized like, it hit me, like, you know, sometimes when you want, like, oh, I know what this girl wants. Like, when you're with a girl, like,
yeah.
She just wants me to say you're pretty. Or she just wants me to say,
yeah.
I'm sorry. Or she just wants
right.
me to say something. Whether or not you believe it, you can tell what they want.
Right.
So I realized she wanted to be the one in power or something.
Yes.
So I wrote her a letter on a card.
Right.
I knew where she lived because we used to drive her home all the time. And I was with David. I think we were going somewhere. La Jolla or somebody. I was like, I got to stop by. David Taylor. I was like, I got to stop by Mitzi's first and drop off this note. And I think I climbed over a wall or something and dropped it in her mailbox.
Yeah.
And it just said, like, I'm so sorry to have gone against you, even though I didn't believe that.
Right.
I didn't go against her. We didn't go against her. Pauly Shore, her son, asked us to come with him.
Right.
On this fucking gig. Whatever. And the other daughter was promoting it.
It was her club, yeah.
Jesus. So I was like, I'm so sorry to have cried. I know you know the best for me, and I'm sorry if I did the wrong – I'm sorry that I did the wrong thing, something along those lines.
Yeah.
And I know you're making me a better comic, and thank you. And then I got the call from, I think, Corey or Duncan.
It had to be Duncan.
Duncan was a talent coordinator then.
Yeah.
And he goes, it was like a day or two later, and goes, Mitzi wants you to showcase this Sunday. And I was like, yeah, she's going to pass me. I could just tell. And I was like, over a letter.
Yep.
I showcased 34 times. I was at the end, I was 1-31-2. That was my final record. I got a non-paid regular twice.
Ugh.
And I paid regular once. And 31, no, you're not ready. 31 different times.
I remember, do you know how uncomfortable it was to showcase for her?
Yeah. Then the whole room would get dry.
And then have to drive her home in the fucking van.
Waiting to hear, all right, you're good, you're in.
She loved it.
Hoping for, so who'd you like today?
Her.
Hoping she'd say you.
She'd scratch the names off the list of the people she didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd circle the ones
she did like.
Mm-hmm. More than once, I saw my name circled.
Really?
Absolutely.
To fuck with you?
No.
No, she didn't think you'd
do
that.
No, because she would not.
I used to grab it when she wasn't looking. Like, I put her stuff down and I
she'd have those red fine point felt pens.
Yeah.
And I remember going, fuck. And I remember once, she had me circled with a star next to it. And I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
And then I knew I was in trouble because by this point, I'd really liked her.
Yeah.
Before the incident. In the desert.
The Palm Springs incident.
It was before that.
I like desert better than Palm Springs. All right.
Before the incident in the desert. And I remember driving her home. And by this point, I didn't give a fuck because I was her assistant. I was working the door. I was living with Fat James, so my rent was really cheap. I was making money. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was having so much fun hanging out with you guys.
Well, we got to talk about that after this.
All right.
All that horribleness. Stevie Z. All your roommates.
Oh, God.
But go ahead. So,
all right. And I remember asking her, just legitimately out of curiosity, I was like, who was the nicest guy to go through the Comedy Store?
Uh-huh.
And she was like,
this is before the incident?
Before the incident. Because I started to think, like, maybe I'm just not getting past because I'm too nice.
Mm-hmm.
And you know who she told me?
Who?
Guess.
Nicest guy to ever come through the Comedy Store. She's not going to say Argus.
Mm-mm.
Who? I would have no idea.
Shanling.
Gary Shanling.
Gary Shanling.
Who he was the first that she tooled around. Right. She made him wait for 7 years.
That's when I went, I'm fucked. this was 3 years into my torture. Yeah. And I went, oh, I got to waste another three.
Oh, no. When she starts comparing you to Shanling, you are fucked. Because she's like, he's a writer. He's not a comic yet. But at least Shanling was making a living as a Hollywood writer.
He's making equivalent to half a million dollars a year.
That story meant like every once in a while he'll come to the Comedy Store
right.
and showcase and then
he
go back
to
his mansion.
He was writing on Sanford and Son. Yeah. Ugh. Dude, I had nothing.
Yeah.
I was living in a one-bedroom apartment with a recently divorced, morbidly obese ex-Elvis impersonator.
Oh, my God. Yeah, so you lived... Yeah, you're like, I'm fucked. If it's Shanling time, I'm fucked.
Dude, I would have to walk to the Comedy Store to pick up the van. I didn't have a car. I would have to take the bus. I would have to walk. And more than once, Danny Lucas in, would
Sound
be
guy.
It would see me driving by and his, and give me a lift and stuff.
Really?
Yeah, he'd be driving into work. Like, I knew I was in L.A. when people started to like, you started to walk down the street and see people driving that you knew.
That you knew, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm like, dude, can I get a ride? Fuck yeah.
I used to take my suicide walks. That's what I called them. Just to keep me from doing it. Just any sort of physical activity. I walk around Hollywood and stuff and Sunset and Santa Monica. Always get texts or Twitters. Like, I saw you walking. What were you doing? It's so weird to walk.
Yeah. It's cool.
What are you doing? It's 75 degrees. Why are you out of your car?
Why are you out? It's 75 and sunny. Yeah. Why are you enjoying your life? By...
So you lived with some of the worst people during the struggle. Well, I wouldn't say people. Worst roommate situations.
I didn't have any money, bro.
Yeah, so you
and I didn't have any options. And if I had to do it all over again, I don't know. I know this. I know I couldn't do it again.
Yeah. If you had to do it over again. Yeah, because you get more prissy as you get older.
I know I couldn't do it. And I don't know.
You lived with Stevie Z at first.
Right, because I was living in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
And that was the nicest place I've lived in since. So my first...
That place?
Yeah, my first apartment was my nicest apartment.
Really? Better than the one you lived in with your brother?
Yeah, way nicer.
Oh. Okay.
With
Stevie Z?
No. Prior to Stevie Z, I lived with the two strangers that I met through the slice.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But then my car died. My transmission broke. So
that's a kiss of death for Hollywood, by the way.
Hollywood.
It's especially like, when you this live might in Santa be Monica. The end of you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Santa Monica is in regular traffic. It's 45 minutes to get here.
Right.
To get to Hollywood.
And if you don't have a car.
Oh, forget it.
I had to take two different buses.
Like a Mexican?
I would have to take two different buses from Santa Monica.
Like you refuse to even.
You know how, you know where the one, dude, if being on two buses wasn't enough awfulness.
Yeah.
You know where it would drop me off?
Where?
At Santa Monica and La Cienega, and then I'd have to walk
that giant hill.
That
hill gives my car trouble.
And I'm like, do I really want to do this? I mean, this is years ago.
You would do it.
And then I was only making $75 a shift as the manager, sometimes for 12 hours.
Oh, yeah, $75.
And then so sometimes if I couldn't get a ride back to Santa Monica, it would cost me $40 in a cab to get home.
Because you'd be out of there too late.
Right.
Oh, no.
So then I'm like, I just spent 12 hours to make $35. I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah.
It was awful. So then those roommates, I didn't know. The lease was up. And I'm like, I don't have any options. I don't have any money. I was friends with Stevie Z at the time. Rent, $250.
Because he had the retard hookup?
Jesus, Harvey.
Well, whatever the term is, he had cerebral
palsy.
Section
8. Section 8.
Section 8 for poor people?
Yeah.
Or for like handicapped people?
I don't know. Okay. I don't know enough.
He had
about
severe
it.
Cerebral palsy.
Yeah.
Where half his body just wouldn't work.
Yeah.
And not like lower half, upper half, side half.
Because of that, I guess he had his balls broken so much as a kid that he's got like the sharpest, quickest, funniest mind. Like I remember him telling me a story. He's also like a gym guy. Like I met Stevie Z on the set of Paulie's movie like a week and 2 weeks in the, after being here. He was the first person I met in L.A.
Really?
First, I show up. It's my first day working on the set of Paulie's movie. I get there early. Nobody's there yet. Second person on set, Stevie Z. I'm wearing a Philadelphia Eagles t-shirt. He says, do you like the Eagles? I go, yeah. He goes, they're my favorite team. He's wearing like a dumbbell around his neck. I go, do you work out? He goes, yeah. I go, oh, dude, what gym do you – So we're talking about like the gym. We're talking about football. I'm like, this kid's great.
Yeah.
And then we used to watch the Eagles games together. And he invited me to live with him for $250.
Wow, that's so cheap.
So cheap.
But
I just want to tell the great Stevie Z story, his Vin Diesel story.
Okay.
So Stevie used to work at a gym. He's like sponsored bodybuilder and stuff. The kid's great.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's one.
And he did comedy.
And he did comedy. At the time, he was doing comedy. And he was working at a gym, and Vin Diesel used to come in, and they became friends because Stevie's fucking hysterical.
Yeah.
And Vin would, like, you know, always try to hook him up, tip him and stuff. And Stevie would never take the money. He's like, dude, I don't want your money. You're my friend. So one day, Stevie's at the counter. Phone rings, and it's Vin Diesel. And he goes, oh, great, Stevie. I'm glad that you're the one working. I have a buddy that's flying into Burbank. His plane just landed.
Vin Diesel saying, oh, great, Stevie. I'm glad you're the one working.
Yeah, because he wanted to send his buddy from New York to the gym, but he's not a member. And he didn't want his buddy to have to pay any money. So he goes, look, my buddy's coming in. He's on his way. He's flew into Burbank. His name's so-and-so. Just let him work out. And Stevie goes, yeah, okay, but I'm going to need $3. And Vin Diesel goes, what? He goes, yeah, it's just sell them in, but I need $3 from you. And he goes, Stevie, I'll give you $300. Do you need $3,000? What do you need? Do you need money? I'll give you money. He goes, no, it's not that. He goes, but Stevie, I'll pay. He goes, if the gym charges, I'll pay the gym when I get there.
Yeah.
He goes, no, I don't want that. He goes, I just want $3. He goes, why do you want $3? And he goes, because I rented Triple X last night and I want my money back. was a piece of shit. was a piece of shit.
Yeah, I remember we all went to Denny's once. And my theory is if you coddle people that have some sort of disability, that's being ruder to them.
Yeah.
Then just treat him as an equal.
Just equal.
Like, I was like, if my brother or one of my friends, if you fell, if we're all walking down the street and you tripped and fell and weren't seriously hurt, right, like,
you would laugh.
You fell hard. Yeah, we'd all laugh at you.
Yeah.
Because we like you. And that was ridiculous. So if you don't laugh, people go, oh, let me help you up. It's like, well, now you're not treating him as an equal.
Right.
Anyway, so that's the excuse for the story that we were at Denny's and she was taking our order late at night once. And you know, I went, whatever, people like, oh, I got the pancake or the slam.
Mm-hmm.
And Stevie went and goes, I want the, because, you know, he had trouble talking. And I was like, oh, you're going to have trouble understanding this guy, to the waitress. Yeah. And he goes, well, good luck getting the Jew to pay the tab. I was like, yeah, I guess that's a good point. I guess a good point. The beginning is your trouble, and at the end, I'm trouble. Yeah, he was funny, Stevie Z.
So great.
I just remember the story that sticks out the most is when you guys, when the gunshots were going off.
Oh, yeah.
In your shitty, wasn't even a shitty neighborhood. It was a fine neighborhood.
No, not then. That was before the Kodak Center.
Oh, so it was worse.
Yep.
All around there, it was worse. Right.
Way worse. It was McCadden and Sunset.
Yeah.
Next to us was a motel that got knocked down because it was all tranny hookers.
Oh. Well, where did the tranny hookers go?
Dude, every time I walked out of that apartment,
yeah,
I would hear the opening riff to Guns N' Roses' Welcome to the Jungle. Like, every time. Like,
jing, 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 jing,
jing, jing. I would hear it in my brain. I'm like, this is it. That, that Axl. Because there would be hookers, pimps, gang members. It was bad.
Wow.
It was really bad. And I was miserable at the time. And I was such an idiot. I would try to out-miserable Stevie.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be like, he'd be like, I have fucking cerebral palsy. Your life's not worse than mine. I'd be like, oh, fuck you. I go, I work two goddamn jobs. I'm not getting on fucking stage. I'm funny. I'm trying to be a good person through all this.
Yeah.
Fuck everything. I want to die. And Stevie would, we would try to out miserable each other. And I knew he was serious. Like, I would joke about suicide.
Yeah.
At least entertain the thought. But I think he had tried it. And, one night, it's late. We're driving home from the store. It's a summer night. It's probably about 2:30, 3 o'clock in the morning because we'd hung out all night at the store.
Yeah.
And there was no parking, so we have to park a couple blocks away from the apartment, which is a worse neighborhood, further east.
Yeah.
Ugh. So we're
further east gets bad there.
Bad. So it's way better now, but then it was a disaster. This is 10 years ago, bro.
Yeah, I guess Hollywood and Highland changed everything there.
Changed everything. So we're walking home. And I remember being mad at Stevie because we had gotten into a fight. But I wasn't so mad that I just lapped him
and
got to the apartment before he did. You know what I mean? Like, well, I'm trying to walk, but I'm trying to keep my pace with his.
It's hard because he's walked so slowly because he's struggling so hard
right
to walk. Yeah.
And we're just pissed. and I see muzzle flashes out of my peripheral vision.
Muzzle flashes?
Flash. It's lighting up off the walls. It's close. It's close enough. Like, wow. Look, dude, I don't know. Like, I always would tell this story and exaggerate, and I just want to keep this as real as possible.
Yeah.
I heard automatic gunfire. It wasn't a pistol. It was automatic gunfire, okay?
Wow.
And it's lighting up the sky. Like, it's bouncing off the – all the apartments are close together.
That means it's bad.
Close.
Yeah. Automatic gunfire there.
It was way worse. So I dive behind a car.
Yeah. Because you're like –
I don't know where it's coming from. My natural instinct was just to dive.
Yeah.
So I'm between a car and the curb on the other side.
Yeah.
I'm across the street.
So the car is blocking you from whatever stray gunfire would come.
Exactly. And I'm on the ground. Stevie is still taking his time walking across the street, and I hear him – his footsteps –
come up to you because you were ahead of him.
I just dove.
Okay.
And he's just walking across the street like nothing's happened. I go, oh, shit, Stevie. And I jump up and try to pull him behind the car.
Yeah.
And he goes, they're not going to hit me. I go, what? He goes, the bullets aren't going to hit me. He goes, I've tried to kill myself and I have to be alive. And I went, holy
what?
Shit.
So he just knew, it was like, it ain't going to happen.
It ain't going to happen.
Like Jack in season 7 of Lost, where he's like, I can't die. I don't know. Something will happen.
So Stevie winds up kicking me out for a stripper, possibly a hooker.
He could live there.
Yeah, she could live there. Because I was out. I remember hearing
you
a
got
girl's
kicked
voice.
Out of a cerebral palsy guy's house on Section 8.
Yeah, after I'd given him all my – I paid 6 months rent in advance.
Which was like $83.
Yeah, I gave him like, 800 bucks. But to me, it was all the money I had.
Wait, you split 250?
No.
No, 250 was your portion.
It was my portion.
Okay.
God. And I'd given him – he needed money at one point. I gave him all the money I had, paid for it in advance for his car. And it was the last month of that money running out.
Yeah.
And there was a girl now living with us in a one-bedroom apartment that was definitely shady.
In a one-bedroom, yeah.
It was awful. I forgot she existed. I heard her voice one night. I was getting ready to go out on the road with Dice or Polly. And I go, oh, shit, Stevie's getting some ass. Good for him. I wake up the next morning. I'm packing my shit. I'm getting ready to go on the road. And Stevie goes, that was Paradise. I think, honestly, was her name. He goes, that was Paradise. She's just in town for my birthday. I'm like, oh, okay. So I go out on the road. 2 weeks later, I come home, and I go. I used to always.
And she wasn't just in town for his birthday.
No, I used to always take the super shuttle straight to the Comedy Store.
Really?
Yeah.
So you get right off flight. Nice.
Get off a flight and be like, I'm gonna go hang out with my buddies and talk about how cool the road was.
Oh yeah.
You remember that? Like,
I used to do that
what's
for
the road
for
like?
The to go back to reality. Like I always do these sweet shows wherever I would go on the road. I was featuring somewhere.
Yeah.
I'm seeing somewhere, or open for whatever it was. I was like, okay, let me go back Sunday, go up to the Comedy Store, catch a dose of reality, get back to working hard.
Yeah, I just wanted to go hang out.
Yeah.
Like, to me, that's all I want. Even performing to me is just hanging out.
You know, I talked to Jake Johansson once. I'll get back to the story.
What did he say?
I was emceeing for him at the DC Improv, and we were hanging out. Because this goes –
I remember when you got that gig.
Yeah, they let me emcee my first MC week.
I remember that. That was such a
John
big deal.
John X gave me that. He used to be the manager there. Now he owns this awesome club, this awesome new club, the Riot Act.
Cool.
It's like right downtown near, I don't know what they call it anymore, wherever the Bullets play. Wizards play, excuse me. I'm still not Bullets calling them the Wizards. No, Bullets. all that like Chinatown area. And it's just gigantic, beautiful club. It's fucking, it's so sweet.
Oh, let's do it together. Let me feature for you.
Okay, we'll figure it out.
That'd be great.
Yeah. You live close to there anyway.
Yeah,
all
right down 95.
Okay. But yeah, but he let me MC for a week, and I was like, thank you. He gave me my first guest spot week,
that's
feature
awesome.
Week, and MC week. But Jake, we're all hanging out there afterwards and drinking, and some people were smoking pot. I wouldn't touch that stuff back then. Come on, have some, whatever. Anyway, so, and I remember him saying, like, I guess some of my wife's friends are in town, and I'm supposed to hang out with them, but I'd rather hear you tell your stories of you and your friend going to get that hooker. I'm not interested in that at all, but I'd rather hear your stories about that. I'm a comic.
Yeah.
I'd rather be around people talking like comics.
Yeah.
Than I would about having to hear about some redecoration going on.
So that was the first time you started to realize that you were maybe a member of
like
a subculture.
Like the Misfit Toys, yeah.
Misfit Toys.
Yeah,
thing.
Where I was like, oh, even a guy like Jake Johansson who's successful as shit.
Right.
Like even he just likes to, I just want to hang out and talk about regular shit.
Yeah. It's weird because like pretty much all of my friends are comics and you forget. that like we just have a level of honesty and open communication that normal people just don't.
Yeah, I guess so.
Like normal friends, yeah, like with my friends. But I remember once I was at the Saddle Ranch and the waitress came up and said something. And I was there with Mike Black. And the waitress, like, I could tell she was having a bad day. And I was like, oh, is it because of all the hand jobs around here? And her face was just appalled. Like, she was like, what? And I'm like, you know, these douchebags. And she was like, like, she was offended that, like, I acknowledged what was going on.
Oh, yeah. Because she's so not used to it.
Right.
I saw Diaz once go up to, like, a TSA person. Someone who worked at the airport.
Yeah.
In some official capacity.
Right.
And saying just something filthy to her in Spanish. And then she's like, oh, mira. And just, like, waves him off. But, like, just laughing about it. Like,
he's the funniest guy ever.
You just met her. So what were you saying? What was the story?
Oh, Stevie's. And so then I come back off the road. This girl, I go to the Comedy Store. I get home. And there's this chick watching Maury Povich smoking Cool cigarette and scraping bong resin, sitting Indian style up in my living room. And I'm like, who is this? Like, I'd forgot about 2 weeks earlier and hearing a girl's voice in the apartment. So then I go into my room.
You're like, hi.
Hi. I go into my room.
You had the room?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then they would get into these fights. And after a week, I couldn't deal with it because I didn't trust her. She had a bad vibe. So whenever
she was a hooker?
I don't know. I don't want to. I don't know. So I.
But. Okay.
So I would hide like my checkbook. I would hide my.
Yeah.
My passport. I used to have some cash at the time from like getting tips working the door.
Oh, yeah.
I hid all that stuff. And I was like, I can't live like this. I can't have my life at the Comedy Store being complete shit and working, getting my balls busted and being afraid if Mitzi drives by. She doesn't like when one of the lights is hanging. And I'm not even getting on stage. Dude, there were years – there were times we only had one employee spot then. It was three fucking minutes.
Just Sunday.
And sometimes I didn't get it because I was the fucking manager. I'm like, this is bullshit. I hate my life. And I was like, I have to at least be able to come home and be able to sleep and not hear them fucking fighting or whenever I leave my apartment.
Worried
about my shit, what little worldly possessions I have. And they would get into these vicious fights, screaming, throwing stuff. I'm like, oh, fuck this. I'm out of here. And I remember Stevie and her one night. Oh, it was awful. So I gave him the speech where I go, I hate to give you an ultimatum, but it's either her or me.
Yeah.
And I explained everything because there's a lot of details that are nobody's business.
Yeah.
And he goes, Steve, you know what? You're a good friend, and everything you're saying makes sense. Everything. He goes, but if you make me choose between her and you – I have to choose her.
God, the heart fucks your life up so much.
And I go like this. I go, okay.
Yeah.
I go, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do, but I'm done here.
Okay.
I'm done. So what do you do? By that point, Fat James was looking for a place.
Ugh.
I can't – I would never – I was so naive to how the world worked. I could have found a small studio somewhere, a small single.
Yeah.
For the same price. And my
right around that time is when I left my place on Poinsettia that was $650.
Right.
Utilities paid.
I could have found something.
Some studio.
But you know what? Everything's easier now. Craigslist now. Westside Rentals. Like, I
also, no one's telling you, like, hey, you look down. What's going on? You're looking for houses? Let me tell you the 10 ways you can do that.
Right. I had no
idea.
You're
on your own. You're an adult. And you're like, what the fuck?
I didn't know anything.
No one told me this shit.
I didn't know that there are cool landlords and shitty landlords.
Yeah.
And I was worried about my
credit. Take advantage.
Yeah, and I didn't know, like, oh, I was like, I don't have great credit.
Yeah,
you
can negotiate.
I don't have 2 months rent in advance. Dude, I'm a college-educated nice guy. Some people would probably let me live somewhere for free.
Yeah, you could have been an apartment manager probably.
Right, an apartment manager. They're like, this guy's not on drugs. He's not going to steal from me. Let him manage the building. He knows how to make phone calls. He doesn't know how to – you don't know how to have to fix shit. You just know how to get it done.
Know how to call the guy who fixes shit.
Yes. Yeah. I didn't know. I had no life experience. I had no world skills.
Yeah.
So I wind up getting into an apartment with fucking Fat James.
Fat James worked at the Subway.
Yes.
And then we start hooking you up all of a sudden, hooking me up, hooking all these people up. And we're like, why is this guy giving
friends.
Me free or half price subs? I don't understand. Who is this fat guy?
Yeah.
It was Fat James.
We
wanted to be a comic.
5 hours on Fat James.
Yeah.
And then, do you remember that one time you came over to hang out?
Yeah.
And he just stripped down to his tidy whiteies to make it uncomfortable?
For attention?
Yeah.
God, Fat James. He just wanted attention so bad.
He just, dude, anybody, everybody just kind of really
wants
all
the same
things. He just wanted friends.
Yeah, he just couldn't get him in his way, so he just went about it the wrong way that actually pushed
friends people
away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But he just wanted friends. I mean, he was a good guy.
Yeah. He smelled once in a while because of his fatness.
Right.
And he wasn't easy on the eye, also because of the fat. A lot of his problems stem back to the fatness.
Wait for the sirens.
Wait for the sirens. I wonder how loud that is. I wonder if these microphones pick that up. Like,
I don't know.
Like as much as we can hear it, or is it'll be like real silent? I guess we'll hear it later.
We'll hear it later. Could you, when you, okay, I think one of the glorious periods of the Comedy Store in my last 10, 11 years was before we got past, before the incident. The incident in the desert changed everything.
The incident in the desert. I really like that.
Because after that, I remember Rogan hearing about it, and he was like, that's fucking bullshit.
People heard about it. They were upset about it.
They were, he was like, that's bullshit, and you started to open up for Rogan. You got passed. Ren Azizi got punked.
Yeah.
Like, up until the incident in the desert, remember when you used to host Sunday nights at the store?
Mathieu let me host.
How much fun was that? You were the
so
best.
So much fun.
Fucking host. Thanks. Potluck host. And the lineup, think of it, was you, Ren Azizi, Painter, David Taylor.
Painter was the hardest guy to follow in the world. Either he would bomb or he would kill. He was so out there.
So funny.
He influenced everyone of my class.
Everybody.
Even though he doesn't do comedy anymore, they're all pieces
he's
of Painter.
The only
Tom
one
McCaffrey, if you see him, you can see Painter in him. There's so many people that you can just see the Painter in them.
And everybody's got
in
stories.
Me.
They remember their bits. His bits are,
back
10 years and we remember his bits.
He was the open micer that we'd all run back in to see.
He was the guy. He should have never have quit.
He wasn't happy out of it.
Yeah.
He was struggling and it wasn't making him happy. Why didn't you quit, by the way?
Because I thought it was a calling.
Not in a way, but like at this point, you're leaving this $250, you're barely making it at $250 rent.
Yes.
So you're leaving, going off on your own, paying a lot higher, and you're still not making it.
Right.
Like how much of you goes like, I should quit. I should go back to Philadelphia.
Every day.
I know you would talk about it sometimes.
Yeah.
You're like, I should just open up a pizza shop in Philadelphia, New Jersey. That's all I want out of life.
I just want to hang out. I think that if you can make people laugh, that's not normal.
Yeah.
I think because everybody tries. Everybody thinks they're funny, but I don't even think I'm funny. I would always get good responses from audiences.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like if you can.
What do you mean, like parties and stuff?
Even like
stage.
Open mic at the store.
Okay.
Let's just concentrate on stand-up.
Okay.
Dude, I would go out and MC for Paulie. There were times I got standing ovations.
Jesus.
In the MC spot.
Jesus. Cold opening.
Cold opening. I had no idea that was rare.
That's supposed to be the bullet spot. They call it biting the bullet. Because you're supposed to go out there and just eat shit. And you know what? They're just not warmed up yet. That's your job.
Dude, there were times where I would do 15 minutes up front and people would chase me on the Paulie's tour bus.
Really?
Honest to God.
Wow.
That's real. So I was like, I know I'm good at this.
Yeah.
I know I'm good at this.
Yeah.
But my logical side was like, it doesn't matter. You might never get a chance to get paid for this.
Right.
But getting back to like me saying comedy's a calling, I was like, if I can make people that happy, I have to fucking do
it. You should
it.
Be doing it.
I have to do it.
What if it was a job that the best thing possible, like best thing possible in this, you're like Ray Romano, let's say.
Yeah.
Making millions and millions of dollars.
Right.
But what if the best thing possible wasn't even close to that? What if the best thing possible was like $45,000 a year?
Yeah.
Would you still go for it there?
Absolutely.
We're still a shot.
Dude, I've given up all hopes of ever being financially independent.
Yeah.
I mean, going through that struggle, it's definitely not about the money.
Yeah.
What's kept me going has been my friendships. It's been that little island of Misfit Toys and having these conversations and just being able to hang out with people that are cool. And my friends are not all cool.
Yeah.
In the Fonzie sense
they
of the word,
sort of get you.
Court's cool in the Fonzie sense of the word, and cool, and cool in the sense that he's just a good person.
The people that get it, whatever the it
all
is
my
to
friends
you,
get it.
It's certain people get it.
Dude, I can go to the store at any night of the week, and go.
That's
right.
Why Dice was always there. There's something's gonna go on here.
It's
or
fun.
Once in a long while, it's just boring.
Right.
So you leave.
Right. So you leave.
But it's usually something's going on.
So it was a combination of having great peers.
Dice said that once, actually. He goes, you know, show up here all the time. Yeah, he goes, something always happens, but I guess not always. And then Rob Williams passes by. He goes, well, Nazi voodoo conspiracy.
Yep.
And Dice's like, well, maybe every night, though.
Okay. Remember Dice telling us that was the best it was ever going to be for us?
Uh-huh.
That if you're not enjoying this time of your career, get out. Because it just gets worse.
Ralphie May told me that.
Tell.
Same sort of thing.
The meanest / funniest thing I've ever seen. Sunday night, potluck, you're hosting.
I hosted it my way. I hosted things my way. I make fun of people.
Fat James goes up on stage. And it was so funny, it made me betray my character.
Which is what? The nice?
It was the meanest / funniest thing I'd ever seen.
Because I found out he used to be in the Marines, right?
Yeah, he was in great shape at one point. And what did you say?
And the story was, I'm going to do an impression of Fat James. I also do an impression of Stevie Z talking to Ozzy Osbourne. Or interviewing Ozzy Osbourne. Like, I don't remember what it was, but this was. I was like, Fat James used to be, and he's fat. Like, he's a fat guy.
Yeah.
There's no, he make jokes about, like, he's a fat, not like, oh, a few pounds. Like, that's a fat guy.
Yeah.
And it was like, he used to be in shape. He used to be a Marine. We saw pictures of him with his hair. He had a pompadour hair thing. He did look like Elvis, sort of.
Yeah.
And I was like, he came home one day. This was a story that he came home one day and he caught his wife fucking his best friend.
Yeah.
And so here's my impression of Fat James the next day. I'm just crying. And then I mime out as I'm crying, opening up the refrigerator. Just taking out a turkey leg and eating it.
I couldn't believe you did that.
Right in front of him, too.
I couldn't.
He'd just gotten off stage.
He was in the room.
I'm just, then I got some ice cream, started eating that.
It was
just
the
miming out.
Funniest thing.
That's what happened, though.
Yeah,
you catch somebody, and they just, nah, give me that fucking salami.
Dude, you know what? I'm gonna give him a call. I haven't talked to him
just
in
say
years.
Hi?
Yeah, just say hi.
Yeah, what's up?
Yeah, what's up? Because I know, like, if I ever have kids and stuff, they're going to be like, Dad, tell us another Fat James story. Because there were so many of them.
There was just something about him. It was the neediness. I remember when he came.
Do you know how I really became friends with I forgot about this. I'm working the front door. There was a guy that was big. He was like 6'6", attacks, runs towards the stage when Eddie Griffin was on stage.
Uh-huh.
I'm working the door. I remember kicking the guy behind his knee and trying to get him in a full Nelson. Nobody's helping me.
Yeah.
Fat James was sitting in the back corner where the open micers hang out when they watch the normal shows.
Yeah.
He comes out and helps me grab the dude and helps me get him out.
Wow.
And I was like, you know what? You're a good dude.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That was really cool of him to do that. That's what it was. And I remember going, for all this bullshit,
He's a nice guy. I know he can be nice.
And he was there when I needed him, which is a lot more than you can say about a lot of people in this town.
Yeah. Rogan used to give him $100 to
watch his car.
When he had that crazy car.
The Cuda.
The Barracuda, yeah. It was an old classic car. And he would give him $100 to make sure nobody hit it.
Yep.
And he would fucking pull up a chair.
Yep.
And a...
Have his radio.
And a massive
TV.
One of those 5.5 gallon fucking big gulp things.
Yep.
And just sit there. Yeah, have his TV and his radio. That's right. Set up camp. Excuse me. Go the long way around. Just...
So great. Dude, so many characters. So many stories.
So you only just haven't quit because you're like, no, I got to do it. Also, it's what else are you quit for?
Dude,
my son is
like,
go home and do what?
Here's the thing. I didn't get started till I was like 27, 28.
Okay. I was 25.
27. I was 27. And by that point, I realized everything else was bullshit.
Yeah.
Had I got started at 20, maybe I would go, okay, maybe a normal life is okay.
Yeah.
But I was like, I hated everything so much.
Right, right.
I knew this was my only option. Number two, I thought I was on a divine path.
Wow.
I really was like, you have to do this. This is – I was raised to believe that everybody has certain talents that they have to share. And I was like, okay, this is my
only
thing.
Problem with that is I know so many open micers because I hosted there for so long
mm-hmm.
who were positive they were going to become huge. And
yeah,
they
well,
did
you
it three
need to have that crazy
quit.
Belief.
Yeah, I know. So it's like when someone – even like you
– that crazy
someone
belief
talented
is
tells
the
me,
rocket.
Like, I know it's a calling.
It's the rocket fuel.
Yeah.
It's the rocket fuel that gets you out of – to get you to L.A. Is that – everybody shows up here thinking they're going to be Jim Carrey or Ray Romano.
Yeah.
Or else you wouldn't – leave your family, your friends, your life behind.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. If you didn't think that
I thought I was going to be a movie star.
Yeah.
I really did. But I got here, and the struggle was insurmountable. But I met really cool people.
Mm-hmm.
I met really cool people that became my friends. And I love being on stage.
Yeah.
It feels really good to make other people happy.
Fleischer told Duncan once about why he used to go so long on stage. He used to do like half hour instead of 15 minutes everyone else was doing. Something like 45 minutes.
Right.
And he said when he's on stage, it's the only time he doesn't feel the pain.
Wow.
Yeah. so dark.
Wow. It's like the wrestler.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it feels right. I used to get high after I got off. I mean, not get high on marijuana or anything. I mean,
right.
I'd feel high.
Yeah.
People would talk to me. They'd be like, good set. Or like, hey, you come into the whatever. And I'd answer them like,
yeah.
Like I couldn't, I just have to sit by the piano for a while.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, let me come down.
That's why I hang out in the back in the waitress booth. Because like, I'll get the audience's energy and I'll be like, what the fuck am I going to do now? Like, yeah. Feel high and I just want to be away from everybody.
Calm down. Like, like that's why no one can go to sleep right after they get off.
Exactly. It's real.
It's too much.
All that stuff where you hear people talk about energy and connecting and all that shit's real, dude.
Yeah, maybe. So what do you do for money now? Like, how do you get by?
I do a lot more comedy.
You're doing more gigs.
Yeah, just doing more gigs. Like, you work your way up.
I think at some point you realize, like, it's not just like, I'm a comedian. It's like, I'm a human and I make my living as a comedian.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's just my job. You're an accountant.
Yeah, it's
we
just
live
a job
next door
to
each other.
Right.
And you make your money that
way. And now,
way,
like, I think I could quit.
Sell mattresses. Yeah.
Like, now I moved out here because I had this desire to prove to the world I was special. Uh-huh. Like, I guess my self-esteem was so low.
Yeah, maybe it's that.
My self-esteem was so low, I guess. I don't know. The crazy
family. Comments want validation. That's why they go into it.
Right.
But they don't get validation early on.
Right. And I don't need that anymore. Yeah. Like, I've proved to myself.
You're an okay person.
Dude, I've survived shit. Dude.
So now you think you could just stop doing comedy because you're like, oh, I'm okay.
I'm okay. It's about, dude, I like me. I'm cool. Dude, Rudy would have quit about 7 years
ago. So if you weren't funny, you would have been doing something else for validation.
Probably. I think funny was probably a byproduct of not getting the validation you needed.
Yeah.
I think I learned how to make my parents happy because they weren't happy people. I think that
so you try to like, I'm just going to smile.
My friends that I grew up with were good athletes. They were smart students. I was a good student, but I wasn't an athlete. I wasn't a good looking guy. But I fucking hung out with the cool kids because I was always funny.
Yeah.
The teachers would let I would shit that normal kids would get in trouble for.
Yeah.
Teachers would let me do because they were laughing.
They were like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's why people who have a bad sense of humor never understand it. Like, what? He did that joke. How come I can't? Like, because you didn't do it right.
Exactly.
When you did it, it annoyed everybody.
Exactly.
When this guy did it, everyone was happy.
Exactly.
They were in a better place in the world because of them. They're in a worse place because of you.
Exactly.
God.
Yeah. So now I feel like I could quit, but I'm too close now.
Yeah. Well, you're actually making more money. And so it's just financially, where would you go? Start over?
Yeah.
Go to law school now? You can't pay for that. Whatever.
But I'm open to any possibility. I've always – the weird thing about me though was like because I feel like I'm on this divine path, I've always been open to any possibility.
Yeah.
Like whatever it may be. Tomorrow if somebody's like, hey, do you want to go run a pizza place? I'll give you ownership of a pizza place in Boca Raton. I'd be like, I'll think about it. Yeah, that sounds like that'd be cool.
My problem is, one, I would need a job like that, like something lined up. Because honestly, what else am I going to do?
Right.
There's too big a break in my work.
Yeah.
You know Sean Miller?
Yes.
Just got a job at the FBI.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love that kid.
Yeah.
He was the best.
He was. He was really cool.
A good person.
Door guy. And
you know, they actually – I did a background check for him because I was managing the store.
That's right. You told me that. He said he was like, can you – because you used to be my boss.
Yeah.
Because he was like, do you think Simone would like lie for me? He goes, no. He would just tell the exact truth because he was your boss. It's not a scam, Sean. He was your boss. It's fine. But he said in some sort of interview, we talked about how his job prepared him. For the real world, like for this job. And he goes, well, conflict resolution. We'd have people like Andrew Dice Clay who would come in and want to go on stage.
Yeah.
And then someone like Eddie Griffin would want to go on stage. I'd have to decide who could go on stage first. Well,
you know what's funny?
Because they're both giant babies.
Yeah. By doing what we do, I'm convinced we could do anything.
Deal with whatever.
Me and you went back to get our MBA, we'd be making $1 million a year.
I don't have a work ethic at all anymore, though. All
right.
It's all gone for me.
The skills of being able to just hang out with people and connect with a real person.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah.
So many people hide behind layers of bullshit. And when you strip that bullshit off, you give other people permission to strip it off. And then that's all it is.
Yeah.
Be cool.
It's also like I would go home. I wouldn't have anything to go home, but maybe there would be some job. Like I would. Or but also it's like all my friends are here now.
Yeah.
This is my new home. This is my home. After like 4 or 5 years, I started saying – not when I visit home. When I come back here, I used to go like, I'm going back to L.A.
Yep. I remember
I'm going back home.
It broke my mom's heart when I was like, I got to get home. And she goes. It was like the first time. Because I always, dude, for my first year.
But the reality was, before you left L.A. to go there, you told your friends here, I'm going home. They're both home for a while.
No.
Oh, really?
I would always say I'm going back to L.A. It took years.
Like, but when you started saying this place is home, how did you refer to Philadelphia?
Philly.
Oh, you wouldn't call that home anymore.
No, you're right. I still consider Philly home.
Yeah.
Like, my goal is to be able to get a even just a stinky apartment in Philly.
Fucking Philadelphia.
I love it, bro.
Most overrated cheesesteaks ever.
Try the chicken cutlet.
At Gino's?
Go to Tony Luke's.
No, no. I love cheesesteaks. Those two places are fucking bullshit.
They're not bullshit.
They're not bullshit, but they're not
they're
like,
overrated.
Oh, my God. What?
They're overrated. Yeah. Yeah, Gino's is good, though. Pat's
no, it's
is
good,
overrated.
But it's not like...
Pat's is good, bro. Compared to the sandwiches out here,
yeah,
it tastes like model pussy. It is the
there's
greatest.
There's some good places. Also, it's like, put some bacon in there.
You can do whatever
recipe.
You want.
It's been 1,000 years.
Dude, do you ever have the roast pork from Danick's now that you're not kosher? It's phenomenal.
Where is that? Out here in L.A.?
No, in Philly.
Oh. The roast pork from Danick's?
Yeah, with sharp provolone.
I would try that.
Rob.
But what?
Dude, broccoli Rob, it's like greens. Could just go to Tony Luke's. The next time we're in Philly, we'll go to Tony
just
Luke's.
Just go to Tony Luke's. All right.
There's nothing to complain about there. It's just great. All everything. Right. We'll get like 4 sandwiches and split them in
That's
half.
The thing. It's like the famous places were usually like the first, but they're not the best. Right. You ever go to Philippe's out here?
Yeah.
The French dip?
It's all right.
And you're like, I get just as good at like Staples Center.
Yeah, it's all right.
It's like that was probably the only place to get French dip at one point, but now it ain't.
Right.
So why is it still whatever. Anyway, all right.
But Gino's is pretty solid.
Okay.
At least just for the headshots outside.
Just for the... Yeah. I get the old part. Aesthetically, I like it.
Yeah, it's cool.
But I'm like, why did I just wait in line for 40 minutes for this? It's just shitty fast food. It's better than that.
Bite your tongue. It's better than that.
It's better than that.
Here's the thing.
It's good fast food.
It's so much better than...
You grew up on it.
Just about everything else. Even the places in Philly that are just average are so much better than anywhere else in the country.
You know, Renaziz is leaving.
Nah, he's not leaving.
I guess he'll be gone sometimes, though. Yeah, I don't know where else I would go.
I want to be both places. I want to have a place in Philly. I want to have a place here. Or just pack up. I love San Diego so much.
Yeah, you always talk about going to San Diego.
Yeah, where I think if I was offered a normal person job down
but
there.
But then would you still go up and do stand-up like once a week or twice a week? That's what I think.
Yeah.
I could do the regular job.
I could do a regular job now easily.
I could do a regular job, but I'd have to have access to a stage. 3 or 4 nights a week just for myself.
Okay, this is what I think. I think maybe I've done my commitment to making strangers laugh and bringing joy into the world. If I found the right girl, which is like saying you'd win the lottery, and I had to get a normal job to support them, I could do that.
And then that wouldn't be your hobby, like building cars?
Maybe.
It wouldn't be like doing...
Maybe, but dude, I'd much rather... Dude, I love making my family laugh more than anybody. Like when I sit around a dinner table...
When you make your friends all really laugh, people you love.
It's better. It's better. Like... Dude, I can't wait to get home, hang out with my family and friends, the guys I grew up with, and make them laugh. That feels the best. And then if I had a wife that and kids, if I could just be funny, cool dad, who cares? I'd go sell insurance for the next 30 years. Life goes by fast, dude.
Have your loved ones really laugh. That's what feels like the best pleasure. You ever hear that Weezer song?
No.
It's about – fuck, which way does it go? I want a girl who laughs for no one else.
Oh, wow.
You know? You should only laugh for me.
Yeah, that's
the monogamy.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's all I really care about. It's not about like go fuck other people. It's about that. But that's all the thing that really matters. I need you, this person.
Dude, my parents probably should have gotten divorced, and all that. They're still together. They're both completely crazy.
That's the thing
people.
Too. It's like you're like I just want a normal life. Like normal life ain't so good.
No, it's all crazy. But
it's all miserable for everybody.
But I remember my mom saying, you know, your dad's always been able to make me laugh, and I'm like, really? Is it that important?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's the one thing I look for in a girlfriend always.
Yeah.
Was like, not even if they can laugh, what their laugh does to me.
Right.
If their laugh makes me feel good.
I fall in love with a laugh more than anything.
Yeah. Then I'll be like, that's what I need that. And that's my juice.
Yeah.
You know?
Because it's the best thing in life. Just having laughs.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
So now you would just have laughs around people. You're like, I can do comedy. I'm not going to. It's hard.
Yeah, I don't care. Like, I'm at a point now where I don't care anymore. It's like, I love it.
Yeah. Also, it's like, yeah, I've done that. I've done that for
over
a decade.
I've done it for 10 years.
It's like, you're one of, if not the best storyteller I know of on stage.
Oh, wow, dude. Thank you.
In a comedic. I'm sure there's like people who just do straight Broadway stories. I don't know anything about that, but of comics. Yeah. You'd be ashamed to like throw that away. Like develop this huge skill.
Yeah. I mean, I like it. Like, I just want to get out on the road and make dude, if I just got to the point where it's just headlining clubs and I was on the road 50 weeks out of the year.
You'd want that?
Yeah. Because I love meeting new people. I love traveling.
I like hitting new stages, going to new cities.
And I like not having responsibility.
Yeah.
It's fun.
No responsibilities. That's the good part.
Oh, dude. When you're on the road, it's like you don't.
It's like there's this security of having a job that you get paid every other Friday.
Yes.
I remember my friends were like,
I missed that.
Can't afford to go out today. Sorry, I'm out of money. But a week from
tomorrow,
today, I will have money.
Right.
When next Friday comes.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, If I don't have money, if you don't have money, we just don't have any money.
We don't know. And you don't know when it's going to come
in. And there's
no
again. Like, well, I have money right now. It's like, no, save that.
Save it, yeah.
You that never... has to last you for a certain amount of time.
Right. Like,
my thought was always like, I have enough money saved up for a certain amount, whatever. The commercials pay off a little bit. Comedy pays off. And once that dries up, I'll just commit suicide then. You know? I'm just
you know
like,
what's funny? That like one of the reasons why like I'm cool with everything is that I've been to as low as you can get financially, emotionally. Like, I've had breakdowns. Like, I've been through it.
Uh-huh.
But, like, it always gets better.
What do you mean?
Like, I was on the road a bunch this year.
Yeah.
A bunch.
And that feels good, right?
Feels great. And I had money, and I was living like a human.
Anybody. Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a second. I'm making – yeah, I can go out to eat. I can go on dates. I can – do I want to get a new car? I could get one.
Yeah. But it's like that's
– I don't want to take on – I go, but even if my car payment was this much, I know I could pay for the next year.
But if you pass by a new cheesesteak place – you're going to pull in if you're hungry now.
Absolutely. And that feels great.
And before
like,
you
like
couldn't.
A human, before I couldn't.
Yeah.
Dude, I remember one.
I know those years.
Dude, like,
you had it worse than me, but I made 2 years. I went $12,000 one year and I made $13,000 the next year. And you had it worse than that.
Worse.
I can't believe that.
I can't believe I've survived what I survived. But the lesson I've taken from all those knocks is that I can survive. So I'm not afraid of shit anymore. I don't care about anything.
Yeah.
You could drop
me
off.
Yeah, it gets done.
Gets done.
People like, if I always think, toss around the idea of moving to New York, people are like, how can you afford rent there? I'm like, how
it
do immigrants afford rent there?
Right, it works.
People get it done.
Yeah, you get it done. Fucking ask questions, make things happen.
Yeah.
Life's way easier. Like, I get caught in my own head and I start trying to solve problems that don't exist.
Yeah.
Life is fucking easy and life is fun, but we make a big deal out of it.
Yeah,
we ruin it.
I catch myself worrying a lot.
Life,
like, what am I going to do if stand up, if all this shit doesn't pay off? At some point, what am I going to do? I had my manager yesterday tell me that he wasn't into my stand-up.
Oh,
pretty
that's
much.
A good feeling.
I was like, oh, that's this is annoying.
Ugh.
But it's like if this ever wouldn't work out, like what would you do? It's like, you'll do something.
Something, yeah.
Something will come.
Yeah.
And then I could just hopefully I could just do comedy just for myself. That's really the only reason I do it anymore. Stand-up?
Uh-huh.
Just for the feeling I get. David Taylor used to say this, where he's like, you could have everyone laughing, and they'd be like, that was awesome. You made us all laugh. That was so good. And he's like, oh, you could go die in a car crash right now. I don't care about you at all, about
That's
you feeling
funny.
Happiness. That's a byproduct of me feeling the joy that comes from hearing your laughs. It's not about you feeling it.
You know what's funny?
What?
Did you ever read David Mamet's book on acting?
No.
He talks about the exact opposite.
What?
He was like, this is your fucking job. He goes, you're not a bricklayer. You're not a lawyer. You're an actor.
Yeah.
He goes, who gives a shit what you think?
Oh.
He goes, if the audience likes it, that's all that matters.
Yeah, Mamet says shit like that a lot. He says shit like, acting, the only thing, hit your marks and say your lines. That's all the acting is.
Yeah.
And it's like, you don't really believe that, man.
To a little
you
bit,
You think
though.
That in some degree, but really you don't believe that.
But I thought it was interesting what he was saying that like, because he goes on in depth, he goes, you know how insulting it is?
So like cruise ship comics are like, I guess that's just zero art part of it. It's just like. I mean,
it's a balance.
The job part is
a balance.
Like, you have to make them laugh. That's why I always say Bill Hicks wasn't a good comic because it was like he wasn't making anybody laugh. He was just making them think or they were liking it, but it wasn't. There was no laughs.
Some of his shit was really fucking funny.
Early on.
I don't.
Most of it was just memorable.
Did you ever watch his when he followed Dice on the Young Comedian special?
No.
I'll let you have the DVDs.
Yeah, that one I should watch. That's early, though.
Early, yeah. So, and I remember Rodney's introduction of him. Rodney goes, this guy's so far ahead of his time that his parents haven't even met yet. How great was Rodney?
Yeah, Rodney was great.
One thing that does scare me about a life in comedy is you see how miserable people like Rodney were at the end.
Yeah, but here's the deal. Don't you also see how miserable regular people are?
Not always.
Not always. But people like Rodney wasn't always like that either.
Yeah.
Carlin came around here, seemed pretty fun, dating a new 30-year-old or whatever it was. So he seemed like he was having a good time with life.
Yeah.
And Ronnie seemed miserable just because he was like, I got nothing to do.
Right.
But he made that movie. And
he was great. He was just
it.
So fucking funny, dude. Rodney Dangerfield. I remember watching Caddyshack when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to be that guy when I grow up.
Caddyshack. He was just like, let's have some fun.
He killed it.
It's like, stay a child as long as you can, I guess. Mm-hmm. We figured out a way to stay a child. But it's like.
Yeah.
If I go to Renazis or somebody like normal that has like a wife or like a living girlfriend, like their place looks like an adult's place.
Yeah.
I had a girl over here
that
day say, it looks like I live in a fucking dorm. I'm like, this looks nice. Like, it looks like a dorm from the 70s. I'm like, I just get shit and I put it there.
Yeah, whatever.
I don't have like a credenza.
No, well, that's what chicks
figurines.
Do. I don't even know where to buy that stuff.
No, me neither. Nor would I know what would look good, what would look tacky.
Yeah, I don't know how to do anything.
Yeah.
I remember when I started to go grocery shopping for myself, I hadn't been into a grocery store without my mom. And then I remember going, if I just want to buy ice cream, I can just buy it.
Yeah.
Like, and going, oh my God, I can eat ice cream whenever the fuck I want.
This
is awesome.
I have 9 things of ice cream in there right now. I get the Ben and Jerry's. They have like mini sizes. I always thought they should have that.
Oh, yeah, like the little shot glasses. Serving. Yeah. It's like, you motherfucker.
And that's like, oh, I don't have to commit to a whole flavor. I can get 10 different flavors.
Yep.
So who knows what I'll feel like?
Yep.
It's so great. That's my say. It always should be invented. My one thing that I really want, it's the same full pint, that size, and even different compartments in that pint, so you can open them up, and maybe like 2 or 3 spoonfuls.
Like the Whitman sampler for ice cream.
A sampler. And obviously you'd pay a little more per ounce, but the variety would help you. Yeah.
What are we doing comedy? Let's just market ice cream.
Somebody knows one of them, tell them to please do it.
Yeah, make it awesome.
Yeah. And there's some I don't like, but I'm like, I'll try a brownie. I'm not into that usually, but I'll try 3 bites.
Yep. Because sometimes you surprise yourself. You're like, pistachio, gelato.
Exactly. Sometimes it's a good.
And you're like, oh my God.
It has to be little openings on like all over it.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Separate compartments. It costs a little more in cardboard.
Let's
I understand
do it.
That.
I'll pay the premium.
Sure. Yeah. All right. So then what are you going to – so do you see yourself quitting then? Is that what you're talking about?
No. Dude, I don't plan any. Day by day.
Whenever. Mac Lindsay he's moving tomorrow or Friday. He's moving to
that kid's brilliant,
Austin.
And it's sad.
He's like, I'm done. I'm done with Los Angeles.
But I get it, but he did make a distinction. He's done with L.A.
Yeah, he's like, I'm still doing stand-up in Austin.
Yeah, he's still doing stand-up. As long as that kid's still making people laugh.
That makes sense to me. It's like,
the world
there's no reason you should
what
be.
What he has to say.
You should be. You see that Stanhope episode of Louis?
No.
Is that what the show's called? Louis.
Yeah.
But he's playing some open micer, wants to commit suicide. Not an open mic, excuse me. He did open mics with Louis when Louis was doing open mics.
Yeah.
Now he's a road comic. And he was saying something to a regular at the Cellar. He goes, oh, do you think comedy only has to be done in New York or L.A. or forget it? Just ignore the rest of the United States.
The entire country, yeah.
Or the world, whatever.
Yeah.
He's like, comedy's everywhere, whatever.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, if you fucking Shane Moss is one of the best comics in the country. And he lives in Austin. He moved from Boston to Austin. He's like, I'm doing it on the road.
Yeah, it's great.
I'll be centralized.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Ralphie May lived in.
I could do that easily. I love that part of the country, and it's easier to travel in and out.
Yeah.
I don't need to stay in L.A.
There is something douchey about L.A.
Yeah.
It's not everywhere, and it's at the store. It's not the same, but it's like people talk about the business too much.
Oh, I'm over
the
all that.
The fact that they call it the business.
Yeah, dude, it's funny that when you ask me questions, I don't think of the full ramifications.
Yeah.
Quit. I could leave L.A. tomorrow.
Yeah.
I wish
New York was in Texas.
Dude, I'd move to Austin. I'd move to anywhere in Texas. Fucking Dallas, Houston, where real people are.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's Chicago. Florida's cheap. Dude, there's so many great places
to live. I've got used to the warm. San Diego I could go to.
Oh, San Diego's the best.
Or Austin.
But I miss the East Coast, too.
Yeah.
Like, it's one
but there's great things about everything. Then you
everything.
Miss parts of the
that's why
that's the thing. It's
living
like,
on the road would
the
be fine
not,
for me.
Oh, quit. It'll all be better. Quit. And then what?
Right. There's always new challenges.
Yeah. Live on the road. That'll present new challenges. It's like,
I'll
be lonely. I'll
be lonely and whatever, but I don't give a shit.
If I could go every weekend, leave Thursday, come back Sunday, every single week.
Oh, that'd be
that
the best life ever.
If I could just play.
What I want to do is somehow people get to know me and know what I do. So I can headline clubs.
Yeah.
Even if I'm just their entry-level guy. But if I have a full calendar of livable
wages. You should
have
a full calendar.
I know.
I'm not shooting smoke up your ass, or whatever the term is, blowing smoke up your ass. That's disgusting. But you are seriously one of maybe the best storyteller around.
Oh, thanks.
Like, I try to be fair with comments like that because I know they're ridiculous. But, like, I'm sure there's guys in New York I don't know. And Big J's really good.
Right.
But it's not even about best or bet. It's like you're right there. You're arguably the best. Like no one. So
I'm
it's like
mix.
How are you not booked?
I don't know.
At least at a league minimum across the country.
I don't know.
For the whole year.
I don't know.
It's definitely a failing.
Crazy.
You can't blame anybody.
No.
Justin explained this to me once. He goes,
he's the best by the
you
way.
You are. You got a guy like Rogan, got a guy like Pauly, Jay Moore. Those guys are in the. Whatever range, a $25,000 range, a $40,000 range.
Right.
That's not a very – it's not a lot of competition to that range.
Right.
But the $1,500 a week guy, you're in the most competitive category.
Yes.
And guess what? They know that dude. He lives the block over.
Yep.
And that guy, they've had him here before.
Right.
And they're all good enough. You're just going to be way better than some other people.
Right.
But God, you get a following. If Comedy Central would ever give you a half-hour special –
I'd be set.
People would get into it, man.
Dude, I have people. I sold out of my t-shirts online.
It's so far behind. You're so far behind on that.
I don't understand. I think what could happen if I ever get a break.
Yeah.
And I've made peace with myself knowing that it may never happen.
Yeah.
Okay? I've accepted that.
Yeah, exactly. Where it's like, eh. The cookies, I like to say it's like this. If you throw up a bunch of glitter, just throw it up and see where it falls. Some fall really far out. A bunch falls in the middle.
I might never
get
a break.
Those ones that fall out are either bums or millionaire actors.
Absolutely.
And you just fall where it goes.
Where it goes.
Whatever.
And
I've
accepted that.
Yeah.
But if I were ever given a break, I'm not saying I'm the type of guy everybody's going to like, but the people that like what I do like it
enough.
Dude,
I've seen you in La Jolla. That's the first time I saw it in San Diego at the Comedy Store.
Yeah.
In La Jolla. Because they get a lot of – Kevin Christie hates San Diego. Too many douchebags.
Right.
Too many affliction douchebags, that type of people. And so there's a lot of them there.
Right.
Those people were laughing at your stories.
Yeah.
Old ladies were also laughing at your stories. I saw them like at tables nearby each other, leaning forward and laughing and smiling. Like
at each other.
So into this.
Yeah.
And it's like if you can unite those people, because I can get those douchebags. And douchebags, I don't mean as an insult, but you dress horribly.
Right.
But like if I can get them to laugh, fine, whatever. But when I see people with gray hair, I'm always like feeling a little ashamed. Like I shouldn't be subjecting myself to you.
This is when I knew all the fucking shit I've eaten over 11 years has paid off just in terms of the craft of
comedy.
As
an artist, you're right there.
Dude, beginning of the summer. Jesus. What the fuck is that? Beginning of the summer.
Yeah.
There was this hell gig in Atlantic City. Justin got me it. And everybody was like, it's awful. It's all blue
Foxwoods.
Hairs. It's kind of like that. It was in I forget what. But they were like, it's all old people. Nobody laughs.
Some casino.
Some casino. It did 45 minutes and murdered. It was one of the best sets I had. Following week, I'm at a coffee shop type place where all the kids – I get intimidated by hipsters.
Alternative kids. Yeah.
Alternative kids. Because I'm like, they're not going to like what I do, and it's too – and they were young.
Yeah, you're saying all the weaknesses of your set. You know,
I'm like, I'm not
that,
smart
that,
enough.
That.
And I'm going, plus they're 18. They're not going to get my references. Yeah. Okay, so there were 18 to 21 was the demographic. The week before, everybody was, say, 40 through 90, with the emphasis probably being 65 to 75,
yeah,
the 80% of the people there. And it went great.
Yeah.
Now I'm working for hipsters, 18 to 21, and I'm like, these kids probably don't even drink because they're in a coffee shop. They're not young enough to get my references. I'm fucked.
Yeah.
So I went out and I tried to do like some of my hackier drinking
stuff.
Yeah,
that's the problem is when you start to like, what should I change for them? But go ahead.
Right.
I know what you're going
to get. Absolutely. Which I don't do anymore.
Yeah.
But I'm just looking at it going, what I do is not going to work.
Yeah.
I can't.
Or also, it's
it.
Like maybe something from my act would. Not like
correct.
You're writing something for them. You're not changing your act completely.
Dude, and because I also, the week before, I'm in a casino, and I was in Vegas the week before that, where it's like you have to open up for yourself.
Yeah.
I have to do my hackier stuff up front to get a room full of strangers to know I'm funny.
Jake Johansson told me that.
You have to.
Yeah, that opening joke.
Dude,
like,
if you look at Delirious, Eddie Murphy does 20 minutes of celebrity impressions and dick jokes
and then gets
before he gets into his stories.
Yeah.
Bill Cosby talks about drinking and Bill Cosby himself before he gets into the stories. And the drinking stuff wasn't working. It was hot and it was packed. And then I sat down on a stool and just like, let me tell you about my little brother. Holy shit. I still have kids find me on Facebook and Twitter and stuff.
Yeah.
That were at that show. And somebody took an awesome picture for me where it was all these kids stretched out to the sidewalk outside.
Watching you?
Watching me.
Where was this?
It was at Lestat's in San Diego.
Okay.
It's a great place. You should do that room.
Lestat's.
It's like a attached to a coffee shop, but they do like a lot of music there.
Oh, yeah. Was that the art place?
Yeah. It's like an artsy neighborhood.
You have to go like off the freeway for a few miles?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Was it like an actual art like?
No. Do you remember that art show we did in like
Oh, you
Escondido?
Did that with me.
Yeah.
Mishevitz. Yeah.
I remember
okay,
that.
It wasn't that. Okay.
No, it wasn't that.
But you had them all laughing. They were
yeah. And I was like, oh, my
Ian
God,
Ian Edwards made
dude.
That clear to me. We came back from touring with Pauly in all over Florida, Miami, Orlando, whatever. And that's where I met him.
Right.
And I was like, oh, you're hilarious.
Right.
And then I heard he was doing the UCB for their big alternative night, the Tuesday night show, the Comedy Death Ray. And I was like, what do you do for them? And he goes,
same
crowds
shit.
Is crowds, man.
He's right.
Crowds is crowds.
All right. This is what I used – when I first started to open up for Pauly, I'd get nervous. And I'd watch people walk into the room, and I would go, he won't laugh. He doesn't get it. How am I going to change?
I have no idea.
And I'm like, I'm in Texas. They're not going to like me for the – dude, everybody, you just do your shit.
Yeah.
And what really drove it home
– how about this? Here's what I feel like talking about tonight.
That's it. Yeah. Just do your thing. And if they like it, great. If they don't, great.
That's okay, too.
Dude, you, not everybody's going to like you, and that's fine. But I remember –
you have a 98% approval rating. That means there are two people out of 100 who are like, no, that guy sucks. And you, if just because you heard them doesn't mean that they're right.
Remember what Dice said on how to become famous?
Half the people like you, half the people hate you.
Half the people hate you. And he goes, it's the people that hate you that make you famous.
They drive you,
But I remember Bobby Lee was featuring. I was emceeing. And there were old people used to make me nervous. Because I was raised to respect them. And I always was afraid that like somehow they would know my parents. And I don't feel comfortable cursing in front of them or whatever. So there was two old couples on this stage. And I'm like, uh-oh. And it threw me off. I wasn't experienced enough yet. Where one variable used to be able to throw me off.
Yeah.
Now somebody could get a fight in the crowd.
Joey Diaz's Dirty Show at the Improv in Brea, right. And you're not dirty at all.
No.
So you're like, I don't know what I should do. And I remember telling you afterwards, I was like, dude, nobody cares if you're not dirty.
If you're funny, yeah.
They'll just laugh. It's they're just not gonna be like, wait, were there no curse words in that? Hold on.
Wait a second. So I try to work extra clean. I MC, I eat it.
Yeah.
Like we talked about some good sets. I've eaten it countless times. I eat it and I'm like, fucking old people threw me off in my brain. Like I'm like blaming them. I should have just done my thing. Bobby Lee comes out, points to the old couple, and he goes, I bet you still eat her pussy. They start laughing harder than anybody. And then they're like the other old couple, and he goes, points to the other old guy, he goes, you probably have to eat pussy because your dick doesn't work anymore. Ah, ha, ha. They are dying. The entire room explodes. Lesson learned. Don't change your shit.
Yeah. Fuck.
Dude, this was a good long talk.
Yeah, it was. It's very long. I was just thinking about that.
Cut this down.
What?
We're going to have to cut this down.
I'm not going to cut it down. What am I going to cut out of that? Maybe I'll make it a two-parter or something.
That would
make 2 hours and 10 minutes.
Let's just end it now.
Well, we're ending it now. Assholes. We're definitely ending it now. I'll just figure out how to make it.
Just press the button now.
I gotta wrap up. I gotta say something. I'll do a wrap up later. But this was fun. This was nice. So,
thank you for having me. It was so fun.
You're usually at the comedy store, I guess, in town.
Yeah, comedy store in town. I'm gonna be in La Jolla again with Schubert and Eleanor. We're doing an off Philly show.
Oh, very nice.
November 10th and 11th. The week after that, I'm doing Caroline's. First time I've done paid comedy in New York, so it's my first time in New York since open
there.
Mic.
Are you going there with Ren Azizi?
With Ren Azizi from the league. Great show, good friend.
Is that the week before
Thanksgiving?
Thanksgiving.
So then I'm in Caroline's with Ren Azizi, and then I do Helium the night before Thanksgiving in
Philadelphia. That'll be cool.
I'm good.
You guys should really go see him if you see him, if he's around. And then what's your Twitter account? Do you have Twitter anymore?
Yeah, it's Steve Simone. Oh, my website is awesomesteve.com.
That one's easy to remember.
Yep. And my Twitter and Facebook's on there. So just remember
Steve
Awesome
Simone.
Steve.
S-I-M-E-O-N-E.
Yeah, but the website's easy. It's just Awesome Steve.
Awesome Simone. So just make that and the rest will be there.
AwesomeSteve.com.
Okay.
That's where I did it.
Well, you got to stay in it, man. It made me sad when Mac was like, yeah, I'm done with LA forever.
Yeah, I talked to him.
It's going
to
make me sad if you do it or if anybody else does it.
Yeah.
But mostly just because I guess they won't be around anymore. Even if people I don't see anymore, it's like as long as they're going to be around, it's okay.
Yes.
It's like Freddie was always on the road towards the end.
Yeah.
And then it was like I barely ever saw him, but it's like just the fact that I might.
Yeah, it was the best. We talked about a lot of shit, man.
Yeah, we did. The struggle, I guess.
Yeah, I guess. Don't give up. Keep moving forward. What did Rocky tell his kid? Keep moving forward.
I don't like to give people speeches like that because I'm like, dude, you might fucking hate yourself in 10 years.
Oh, dude, I never tell anybody with comedy. Oh. I go, you listen. I don't ever. I go,
yeah, don't
do what you have
to
do. Yeah. Oh, I would never wish this on an enemy.
If you like it, then do it while you like it. And then if you don't like it anymore, just stop.
Yeah, I tell people, keep your job.
That is what Ralph May said to me in the main room one time. He goes, how long have you been doing comedy? I was like, a year and a half. He goes, oh, that's when it's just fun. I was like, what do you mean? He goes, it ain't about anything else. It's just about that.
Yeah.
I didn't get it till way later when it was. So like, right. Oh, I got a new bit. It works.
I know.
Yay.
That's all it took.
Yeah.
Let's go eat.
All right. Yeah, let's go eat. Then we got to play softball, which is another thing we do.
It's awesome.
Comedy Store softball team. Okay. Bye.
Thanks, Ari.
You're welcome. Well, that's it, everybody. Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank number 28. Persistence has come to a close. Thank you very much to Steve Simone for coming over to my apartment and talking to me, my new and improved clean apartment. We went on to play softball right after that with the Comedy Store softball team, and we went on to lose by 25 runs. They told us in the bottom of the fifth that we needed to score 15 to bring it within 10 runs to continue the game, and we scored zero. But we're 2-3 in the season, so that's not bad, although one of the wins was by forfeit. Anyway, that's our show. If you want to find Steve Simone, look for him on Twitter or on his website. I'm on Twitter, too. If you guys have any suggestions at all as listeners, I'm more than happy to listen to them. So you can contact me through my website or on Twitter, at Ari Shaffir. Please subscribe to these in the future. And a couple shows, like I said, I have coming up. I said in the beginning of the podcast, but I'll just say I think I'm going to be in all around Ontario. I'll be all over there at the Yuck Yucks, I think in Ottawa and in Toronto and somewhere else in January. I believe that's true. I'm not positive, but I think I am. So that's it, everybody. Thank you very much for tuning in. Please come back next week. We have a good one next week. Should I spoil it? Yeah, nobody's listening anymore at this point in the podcast. It's about suicide. And then the week after that, it's going to be amazing. I can't wait for that. I haven't done the interview yet. I'm doing it soon, but it's going to be great. All right. Thank you very much for tuning in. Ari Shaffir, Skeptic Tank, number 28. Persistence with Mr. Steve Simone. Over and out.
Don't ever let them stop. Tell old bad luck that you ain't buying. You can't think if you keep trying. Hang on, boys. Keep on trucking. I say hang on, gang. Keep on trucking. Hey, hang on, world. And keep on trucking. I say, hang in there. We'll keep on trucking.